north.
Yes, I know Captain Stern. Never did there live a kinder, more generous man.
See?
Unless maybe the preschooler's prostitute ring. Huh?
A longtime Justice Department employee, Timothy Parsons, busted and charged with child pornography possession and distribution. The very agency that's supposed to hunt down these monsters now caught harboring one of their own. Then the New York Times dropped a bombshell on Rhode Island priests abusing hundreds of kids over 75 years with the church, shuffling predators like deck chairs on the Titanic while covering it all up.
The public deserves to know the truth, in my view, and they deserve to know it as a complete story, not a series of short stories that are told over time or over decades as priests are charged or as the media takes a particular interest over a certain period of time. The public deserves to know the whole story from 1950 to 2026, to see it all in its raw emotion and horror and impact.
Piling on, the cartel's black book of child buyers, allegedly kept by El Mencho himself, reportedly packed with 220 names of global power players, including some right here in the United States, scumbags placing custom orders for trafficked kids, complete with specific ages and twisted preferences.
The cartel leader El Mencho, who was just killed, had a list of all the different world leaders that were on it and who was trying to get children, because the drug traffickers make more money at trafficking children, and he has a list of world leaders and powerful people who are asking for certain kids and ages and types, and that list is what they're trying to protect right now.
And not to be outdone, the Uniparty, Congress itself, the deep state global elite filth is protecting their own while the kids pay the price.
I just think it's really disgusting how this institution protects itself, because y'all, just half of them voted to send this stuff to House Ethics, where you know it's going to die. We know that members of Congress are using taxpayer dollars to pay off sexual harassment. We just had a member of Congress literally sexually harass a woman that then lit herself on fire, and you guys all protected him. You guys all protected my own side, your side. And so if you guys want to talk about victims, if you want to go out and virtue signal, and then you guys are going to kill her stuff on the floor and then try to pass. Yeah, of course, we should subpoena all of this stuff. But just, I'm not going to sit here and play games. I think it's a complete fraud. I think that's why the American people hate us. I think the midterms are coming up and everyone should go on record for this. And I hope that members are exposed for this. I hope it goes back, I think, to the 70s, because it's wrong that it's happening. It's wrong that we cover up for it. It's wrong that we can't center our own side because people are busy making deals because you guys don't want to center your side. It's a deal that's been cut. People hate us for it. So yeah, I support it.
You know, Congress has paid over $17 million in hush money for sexual misconduct inside of the offices in these buildings. And what's more is that was taxpayer money, right? The allegation is that President Trump paid $130,000 of his own money. But here in Congress, we have, there may be some on this dais. I mean, I'm for turning loose all of these records. Who in here has had the taxpayer pay for their sexual misconduct charges, the hush money? I bet there's some over there. There may be some over here. I don't know, but I do know it's taxpayer money, and I do know not a single penny of it has been turned in as a campaign finance expense.
From DOJ insiders to cartel traffickers to Capitol Hill payoffs, the pattern screams one thing into the noonday sun. The powerful shield the predators, because too many of them are the predators themselves.
How do we do it to where we hold people accountable but still keep the system from collapsing, as you talked about earlier?
Let the system collapse. A system run by twisted power pedos is no system at all.
He's nothing but a low-down, double-dealing, backstabbing, larcenous, perverted worm. Hanging's too good for him.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big Panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is, and they're still going to try to stay in control, but because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have a conversation for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy Ultra Methylene Blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, Methylene Blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Friday afternoon. We're going to have Jay Dyer in studio with us in the next hour. Probably be opening up the phone lines for your calls in the third hour. But we have a heck of a lot to talk about. Obviously, the ongoing war in Iran will be our major topic of conversation. But there's a lot of nuance there to get into. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right into it. Here it is, your daily dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your daily dispatch for Friday, the 6th of March, 2025. Trump says no deal with Iran demands, quote, unconditional surrender. U.S. President Donald Trump said Friday that there would be no deal with Iran except for unconditional surrender a week after the United States joined Israel in launching military action against Tehran. So if you're keeping track, folks, this was about their nuclear weapons. Actually, it was about their ballistic missiles. Actually, it was because they were about to attack us. Actually, it was because Israel was about to attack them. Actually, it was because they were about to attack Israel. Actually, it's about regime change. Actually, we don't want a regime change. Actually, it's about destroying the country entirely. No surrender. It's not a war, but we are demanding an unconditional surrender. So there's a well-planned operation, we can tell. Meanwhile, Russia supplying Iran with intelligence to target U.S. forces, says report. At a critical moment in U.S. history, the conflict has already spread far beyond the Middle East as Iran retaliates against U.S. bases in the region, with attacks reported as far as Azerbaijan and Sri Lanka. Russia has condemned the conflict as an unprovoked act of armed aggression by the U.S. and Israel, despite its own brutal ongoing invasion of Ukraine. Well, a little bit different, though. A little bit different. Theirs was justified. Theirs was limited. They are not and never have been carpet bombing Kiev for the hell of it. No, they had a lot better reasons, a lot more reasonable goals when it came to Ukraine. It's completely different. Of course, problem is that America set a precedent that says we're not at war with Russia. We're just providing Ukraine with all of the weaponry and the people to run the weaponry and the intelligence to target the weaponry. But it's not us. It's Ukraine doing this. So why wouldn't Russia do that also? Why would Russia not be providing Iran with the weapons and the intelligence and the targeting that they need to do significant damage to America? Duh. This is going to happen, obviously. Meanwhile, Justice Department publishes documents with sexual assault allegations against Trump. The Justice Department posted a trio of FBI interviews with a woman who alleged President Donald Trump sexually assaulted her when she was a young teenager after she was introduced to him by Jeffrey Epstein. The woman's central allegation, according to FBI summaries of her interviews with investigators known as FBI 302s, is that Trump hit her after she bit his private parts when he attempted to force her to perform sex acts upon him. He, of course, denied wrongdoing in relation to the Epstein allegations. We'll get into this a little bit as well. I can't help but wonder if the timing isn't related to some developments when it comes to Iran and whether, you know, we aren't witnessing sort of the war aims themselves being dictated by blackmail negotiations going on behind the scenes. We'll touch on that. Meanwhile, U.S. economy loses jobs in February. Jobless rate rises to 4.4%. The U.S. economy unexpectedly lost jobs in February, and the unemployment rate increased to 4.4%, potentially hinting at a deterioration in labor market conditions that could put the Federal Reserve in a difficult spot amid rising oil prices. The decline in non-farm payrolls reported by the Labor Department in its closely watched employment report today was the sixth since January 2025 and the second largest, Part of the drop in employment last month reflected a strike by healthcare workers and a winter storm that weighed on construction as well as leisure and hospitality payrolls. But it's fine, guys. It's fine. We just, are blowing up all of the oil-producing regions of the Middle East. So I'm sure the economy will turn around any day now. Finally, analysis suggests school was hit amid U.S. strikes on Iranian naval base. I feel like they changed this headline. Basically, it's been decided, investigated, and it was an American strike, apparently, not an Israeli one. Surprisingly, not an Israeli one that hit the elementary school in the southern Iranian town of Minab as the deadliest known episode of civilian casualties since the United States and Israel attacked Iran. And no side yet has taken responsibility, but a body of evidence assembled by the New York Times, including newly released satellite imagery, social media posts, and verified videos, indicates the school building was severely damaged by a precision strike that occurred at the same time as attacks on adjacent naval base operated by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. We are just doing this now. Again, it's kind of, it's shades of the opening stages of Gaza, where they hit the big hospital in Gaza, and it was this big kerfuffle, and there were all these articles and these falsified audio recordings proving that it wasn't Israel that hit the hospital. They would never. And then in the ensuing 12 months, they bombed like every single hospital in Gaza. It's like, I mean, why was it such a big deal the first time when they just keep doing it? So, yeah, we blew up an elementary school on the first day of attacks. We also blew up one yesterday. And so far we've hit, we meaning American Israel, has destroyed at least 13 hospitals in Iran already. Because this is not, it. In all fairness, it's really not a war. It's just a campaign of murder. At this point, there's no war aims. There's no threat. It's not soldiers fighting soldiers. It's just terror bombing on civilian populations, destroying civilian infrastructure with the stated goal of leaving Iran as a broken, shattered, failed state that finds it impossible to rebuild. Like, that is the goal at this point of the conflict, is massacre as many civilians, destroy as much civilian infrastructure, that the state itself will just be an endless quagmire mess of, failed state chaos. So that's literally the stated goal at this point, and I guess unconditional surrender is the only way that they're going to get out of it. But sort of like, okay, well, what is unconditional surrender? What are you going to do once they unconditionally surrender? I mean, there's been a ceasefire in Gaza and Lebanon for the last 2 years, and Israel's killed like 1,000 people during that time, so, or last 1 year, rather. So again, I mean, the whole thing is, just as ridiculous as it ever was. And I'm in awe. I am awe-inspired. That might not be the right word, but I think it is. At the ability of boomers to swallow propaganda. It really is, like, spectacular. Like, it's unbelievable. I actually had somebody send me a message today, one of these boomer people, that was like, it's like, this statement from Trump about unconditional surrender is exactly what we need. This shows that he's serious about what we're doing, about what we're facing. And it's like, no, the demand for unconditional surrender represents the Trump administration's flailing incompetence, their inability to state even a vaguely reasonable goal for this campaign. If he'd said this from the outset, you might have a point. The fact that this only comes after waffling about it and changing the goals and changing the aims and changing the reason that we went in 5 or 6 times, like, it's just amazing that they, like, project this vibe of, like, intense competence on the American administration, as if everything that's happening is just exactly according to plan and everything's going perfectly and it's just a matter of how much butt we kick. You know, it's just like, no, they're getting us into a gigantic quagmire, obviously. And look, I don't know. We don't need to go over it over and over, but I get it, okay? You know, I get it. You've lived through Afghanistan and Iraq in the last couple of decades. You've watched time and time again as America has gone to war in the Middle East, only for it to have catastrophic consequences for decades on end. But you think, okay, this time it's different, though. But this time it'll be different, I bet. I'm sure. But I don't know how many times this has to happen. And it really, it's hard for me to even explain like what we're going through. Cause it's so, it is like unbelievable. It's like unbelievable. Like I really have trouble understanding the hell's going on with these people who just, I mean, that alone, right? The idea that like we've been through this so many times, the exact same thing is happening again. And people are just like, great, let's do it. It'll work this time, I bet. And I'm just like, what is happening to everybody? What is wrong with everybody? It's beyond being able to like find stuff out, knowing what's really motivating people. Like, I could kind of understand how back in like 2005, if you were like, no, but there are weapons of mass destruction. I'm pretty sure. Like, once you find out that there never were weapons of mass destruction, like, how many times, just how many times do we have to be right? How many times? This is like 100% what happened to Ukraine. How many times did we hear people talk about the Russia-Ukraine war as if this would be, it'd be super quick? I mean, there were people at the beginning who'd be like, by the end of this, Zelensky will be president of Russia. Ukraine is just itself basically a failed state. It has like a quarter of the population it did when the conflict started. Russia has just systematically been taking towns on a regular basis, daily, for months on end. I mean, so 2 years ago, when we were sitting here going, this is bad, this isn't going to work, this isn't good, it's just going to spend a bunch of money, and then Russia's going to win. And we were all told we were idiots, we were all told we didn't know what was going to happen, we were all told we were wrong, and then of course we were right. And so, it's like, this is your chance. Like, right now you have the opportunity to make a choice to not be an idiot, retard, moron who has to feel ashamed for yourself in 2 years. Like, just mark it down. Just mark it down right now. Because the thing that I have trouble comprehending and like actually wrapping my mind around is the fact that I can think of no less than like five or six things that this has happened with, right? COVID-19, the mail-in ballots and the stolen election, the Ukraine war, the Iraq war, the Afghanistan war. I mean, time and time and time and time again. We're right. We tell everybody what's going to happen 2 years before it does. Everybody tells us we're wrong. 2 years later, they all admit that we are right. But their mind does this weird trick where they go, okay, going back 2 years ago, you know, Harrison said that, you know, the Ukraine war would be a debacle and Russia would eventually win and that, you know, it would just be a giant boondoggle. But I was still right to think that it was going to go well. But actually, if I think back 2 years ago, you know, even though they were wrong, even though they know they were wrong, even though they have the evidence now that what they thought was going to happen didn't happen, what I thought was going to happen did happen, they still look back 2 years ago and go, yeah, but he still didn't know. It could have gone another way. I was right to think that this was a good idea. So it's just, I can just see it now. Like, I feel like I'm time traveling where I just hear people say things. And I go, in 2 years, they're going to have to admit they were wrong. And they're going to like, they're going to be like, yeah, maybe it wasn't a good idea. But going back, they're going to go, it could have happened though. No, but you know, I was right to think that maybe it could have happened. And I was right to support the Iran war. So it's just crazy. I just don't get it. I mean, we're just stuck in this cycle over and over again where it's just absurdly obvious the trajectory this takes. And I genuinely don't understand how like, intelligent people, thoughtful people, people older than me, just can't wrap their minds around what's happening here. It is crazy. It truly, I don't get it. I think there's something wrong with your brains, and I'd love to try to fix them for you, but I can't do that for you. You have to do it yourself. I should show you the message. It's just like, yes, now Trump is serious about Iran. No, I mean, it's just not going to happen. Here, let's just go to clip 20 here. This is a professor from Tehran University responding to Trump's new demands for unconditional surrender. And I wasn't watching it, but on X, I saw about 10 seconds of Greg Gutfeld. This is another weird thing, right? You got people like on Fox News, they got good heads on their shoulders. They know what's up. And then they just become the most shameless propagandists, the instant war or Israel demands it. Greg Gutfeld is one of these. I have a lot of respect for Greg Gutfeld, but he's he's does a joke yesterday where he's like, yeah, we killed the Ayatollah. And then, you know, they went to their council of elders and it's like a picture of like three goats. And it's like they're goat herders. And it's like, is that really what's happening here? Is like the Fox News watchers out there genuinely have this like, honestly, like classically racist, like 20th century view of just like everybody in the Middle East is a goat herder that can't read. Like, is that actually the level of like ignorance that we're operating under? Is that why people are so confident about going after Iran? Iran has 90 million people. They produce something like 250,000 engineers every year from their universities. So what are you talking? They're an extremely sophisticated, extremely advanced, for all intents and purposes, first world nation. They just don't have some of the liberties that we do. Fortunately for them, right? But this idea of like, Iran, it's just a bunch of like goat herd. This is why we're going to lose. Is why we're, because I think that is literally the image that people have in their minds of Iran. And it is deliberately false. This image has been deliberately planted in people's minds. We even go to this video. Let's go to clip 20 here. This is Professor Mirandi from Tehran University.
Could a new leader, do you think, negotiate with Trump and agree to his terms?
No. Iran is not interested in negotiating with Trump or the U.S. regime. Iran is going to punish the United States, and we are in the process of doing it. This regime in Washington has tried to cross a bridge that's a bridge too far, and they're messing with the wrong country. We're not Venezuela, we're not Iraq, we're not Libya, we're not Afghanistan, and we're not Syria. This is the Islamic Republic of Iran, and we will make sure that the United States regrets the aggression against the Iranian people and the slaughter of children and the slaughter of innocent civilians and the murder of the leader.
Yeah, I don't blame him. And by the way, Trump has now, as far as I've seen, according to reports, basically 24 hours after the fighting began, he asked for a ceasefire and Iran did not respond to him. And then apparently, according to reports yesterday, he again asked for talks with Iran and again, Iran rebuffed him. Like they're not, like Trump is trying to talk to Iran and Iran is not interested. That alone tells you who's got the upper hand in the conflict, right? The Kurds also outright rejected Donald Trump's demands to fight for them. There's a letter, the letterhead says, from the First Lady of Iraq, and it basically says, the Kurds are not your mercenaries because we did that already. The Kurds fought for you in, I think it was 1992, and then when the blowback came against the Kurds, you didn't protect us. Why would we fall for this again? So again, in an act of desperation, because the airstrikes would never be sufficient to achieve the goals as laid out, they need a ground force. They can't politically send American troops over there, so they go for the Kurds. But then that causes a whole bunch of problems with Turkey, since the Kurds are like a separatist group in Turkey. And any guns we send to them, sure, they might be used against Iran, but they're more likely to be used against Turkey, our NATO ally. So this is like a total boondoggle nonsense. From Dana Narwez Ali. The Trump phone call to the Kurdish leaders must be recorded as one of the darkest pages in human history. The president of the United States, at Israel's request, threatens the Kurds to either commit suicide or face consequences. The president, blackmailed with Epstein files, is now blackmailing a defenseless nation to either act as cannon fodder or get published. The leave us alone, we are not guns for hire screams of Iraq's first lady didn't come in vain. Kurds are now told, quote, die so Jews live in peace or you will die anyway. This is how they treat a nation of 40 million who chose friendship with the West over fighting it. I don't know how history will remember this day, but I want my Kurdish Muslim youth to remember this forever. The Jews in the West are not our friends. They were never our friends. Again, like, do you understand that this is exactly what we've been talking about for the last 3 years? And by the way, the Europeans are starting to break with us too. I don't know where this goes, but obviously we can't rely on the Kurds. Because why? Because we betrayed them. We can't get talks with Iran. Why? Because we kept betraying them. It's like now like France is moving in to try to protect Lebanon because Israel is just going insane on Beirut and just wants to turn Beirut into the new Gaza because they're insane. Because, again, if you can remove yourself from the continual flow of information, just see this like objectively, all that's happening here, as I reiterated yesterday, is you've got Israel not under threat from Iran, not under threat of from Lebanon at the time, ceasefire in both places, just on their own volition, decided to start bombing the capitals of their neighbors. Just put it in any other situation. Just imagine if one day, you know, the president of Poland just started bombing the hell out of Germany and Lithuania, and it's just like, and they're the good guys, and they're the people that we have to protect forever with everything we've got. I mean, some of the videos today, clip 21 here, the Epstein coalition launched strikes on a suburb in Lebanon, just broad daylight, taking entire buildings down. Let's watch. Let's go to clip 22 here. I mean, look at this. There's an entire apartment block being reduced to rubble with an airstrike. Why? It's just innocent people live there. This is just a city. It's just a major world city. In the 60s, Beirut was called the Paris of the East. It was like a, you know, five-star destination. Yeah, I was going to say like Dubai or something, but better than that, right? Because it had history. I mean, the French have had, you know, they basically colonized the Levant 200 years ago. That's why, you know, the French language is like lingua franca, and that's why Macron now is, you know, giving speeches in defense of Lebanon. They have like a history with Lebanon. They developed Beirut. It was like the most peaceful city in the Middle East. Lebanon was majority Christian until the 80s. This is just one of those things. It's like when they're always like, you know, Israel's the only democracy in the Middle East. Like literally right next door is a multi-faith republic called Lebanon. So what are you talking about? No, the multi-faith country called Lebanon, they used to be a Christian state that essentially was European in character, right? It was like any city in Greece or Italy. It was on the Mediterranean. They spoke French to a large degree. Obviously, they're in the Middle East and there were Arabs there, but it was for all intents and purposes, like you wouldn't have felt in an exotic place if you went from Paris to Beirut. They were pretty similar. Then Israel got involved. Then Israel kicked a bunch of Palestinians out who went into Lebanon because they were hosting them as you know, refugees. The PLO broke out, the Lebanese civil war, and the whole place has been like utterly destroyed. I just want you to understand that like the boomer American image of just like a bunch of sand and goats in the Middle East. Some places are like that now because Israel made them that way. Never used to be this way. Used to be practically European. What does that tell you about the fate of Europe into the future? Maybe we'll be like this next.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have domination for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com. Unless you've been hiding under a rock, you've heard about methylene blue. Well, we have the best. 7 years ago, my medical doctor told me, get on any USP-grade methylene blue. Just buy it online. So I did. really didn't feel anything. My wife felt some energy. I knew it was good for my mitochondrion cells and the telomeres and things, but I kind of forgot to take it because the results weren't that dramatic. Then my main sponsor, Bigley, almost a year ago, said, try this. We have true USP medical grade out of Florida. This company actually makes it for the medical system, but they're letting us buy it and put it out. Unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen. 15 minutes after I took it, I felt electricity through my hands and body, surging energy. It was actually kind of scary. Then it peaked in about an hour, and then no letdown. You can take this stuff and go to sleep. My workouts got better. My clarity, my focus, it's really been crazy. So, you know, the news and information we cover is super accurate. You know, the guests we have on have track records of being super accurate. I don't promote anything that isn't bona fide and real. So for all of you that have been on the fence out there, believe me, you're missing out if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com and get our Ultra Methylene Blue. It is simply insane. I've given it to almost every guest that's come in on the show. I forget sometimes. And every guest has had from dramatic to insanely incredible results while they're still on the air for an hour. So here's some excerpts of what they had to say about it. You took Methylene Blue about 30 minutes ago. Are you feeling it?
I think I am. I feel it in my head and neck, too. My brain's going really fast. I really like it. I'm going to have to get on this stuff.
Here, show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it. Unlimited.
Oh!
Ah! Ah! Yeah!
Kind of gives you like a boost of energy. It's not like an energy drink where you get the jitters or like you're just ready for the day and you're never going to sleep. It's more so like it clears the brain fog where you're actually, you know, able to focus more clearly.
You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible.
I feel lighter. It's really interesting. I almost like feel smarter.
With Methylene Blue, I do notice that it does seem to give me more mental energy.
You totally feel the difference. I use the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it, you can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up this pump.
Well, you can always get it at thealexjonesstore.com, but we'll certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules.
With this, it's like in your head where you're like, you can feel it. Your body's a little tingly, but you're just more aware of what's going on.
Powered by Methylene Blue, Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Got some crazy videos to go to here. And again, we're just talking about the war in Iran. Let me just tell you what we've been up to, okay? Elementary school in Tehran hit, Iran's foreign ministry says. An elementary school in the Iranian capital, Tehran's Niloufar Square, has been struck in U.S.-Israeli attacks, according to the Iranian Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesperson. They said on Friday in a video on X, purportedly showing this school with students before and after the attack, without elaborating on the circumstances or the number of casualties. And what one of the theories is that this school that was hit in particular, maybe 10 years ago, was the site of a Iranian National Guard or a Revolutionary Guard thing. And so it's thinking that maybe they're using intelligence that's like 10 years old to target places that used to have Republican Guards but no longer do. Revolutionary Guards, Republican Guards, whatever. At least 13 hospitals and health facilities have been hit during attacks on Iran. At least 13 hospitals and other health facilities have been hit during the U.S.-Israel attack on Iran, global health chiefs said. The World Health Organization said it was checking on reports that four medics had been killed and 25 others injured. It's not exactly a surprise. It's just like, what are we doing? What is the point of this? And of course, the point of all of this is literally just to cause the most amount of death and destruction as humanly possible. Not even a joke. It's not an exaggeration. It's not a mischaracterization. It is literally the stated purpose. After all, according to the people directing this, that is the Israelis that run America, Israel is preparing for a multi-week military onslaught alongside the U.S. to fully dismantle key pillars of Iran's theocratic state and the Revolutionary Guards that protect the Islamic Republic, said current and former Israeli officials. A senior Israeli military official said Israel's objective was to dismantle the regime's military infrastructure, including the IRGC, and also the civilian infrastructure, like police stations and hospitals and elementary schools. It's actually what we're targeting because we don't have any other goals. Like, our goal is to cause the most amount of damage and pain to the Iranian people as we possibly can, and that's just what we're doing, I guess. Iran ready for U.S. ground invasion, according to the foreign minister. We showed you the video yesterday, Abbas Araghchi, saying, worried? No, we're excited. We're ready for the ground invasion. Come on, let's get it kicked off already. Bombing of girls' school in Iran that killed more than 150 was probably U.S. airstrike, military investigators believe. Even The Independent is reporting on the fact that the Iran war is underpinned by end-time religious fervor in Washington and Tehran. Which, again, it's good to know that, like, it's good to remind everybody that, like, literally the religious extremists in this conflict, the ones being motivated by a religious extremism, are literally the Americans and the Israelis. You don't need a, you know, religious justification for defending your own country from attack, right? It's not jihad to simply respond to aggressive military action against you. That's actually perfectly reasonable, and any secular state would do it. It's America and Israel that are acting with the extremism, with the illogic of the religious fanatic. And you have to wonder if this isn't related. After all, it appears as though there is still this, like, conflict going on in the Trump White House. Netanyahu yesterday asked the White House if Iran talks were happening behind his back. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu asked the White House for clarifications earlier this week after learning the Trump administration officials might be communicating with the Iranian regime. Netanyahu's outreach suggests the Israeli government is concerned about a scenario in which the U.S. pursues a ceasefire before all of Israel's war objectives have been achieved. And I think it's kind of interesting that, like, right as this information came out, you had the report of, it was leaked that, well, not leaked, but it was a sort of a threat from the DOJ saying, you know, we got some more Epstein files that we could release. You know, we think we might do that. I saw people speculating whether that was the case. Now it has been released, and yeah, it turns out, sure enough, they specifically release files that make Trump look bad. DOJ releases missing Epstein files with interview of Trump sexual assault accuser. And so, again, I think this is a little glimpse behind the curtain at what may be, you know, dictating the course of this war. Is you've got America with its own interests trying to navigate a obviously extremely hostile and, dangerous foe in Iran while simultaneously being forced to do things that we wouldn't otherwise do by the subversive fifth column of Israelis here in America and overseas, you know, threatening us to do their bidding there. So, you know, we're still sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place because of the cowardice and quisling nature of the people that we elected specifically to not play in this little game. And so it's, you know, maybe it's a coincidence, but I'm pretty sure the DOJ said like 2 weeks ago, we're done. We're not releasing any more. That's it. It's over. Everything that's been released has been released. Everything that's going to be released is already out. That's it. It's over. Until Israel hears that Trump might be getting cold feet on this whole destroy America in Iran operation, And suddenly some more files are going to start to come out. Suddenly, specifically the ones about Trump making him look bad might start to leak. So you weren't having any discussions with Iran, were you? You don't have any secret discussions behind our back, or you'd be a shame if more of the Epstein files got released, Trump. So I think that might be happening a little bit behind the scenes. And that's sort of what I really want to talk about today. There's sort of two, I think I might do a follow-up. Because we have the Eighth Front, which is obviously the stated goal of Israel to wage war against America as the rematch against so-called Rome. And basically a war with reality, saying that, you know, we have to win in the information war world, just as it's just as important as the physical world. And by the way, you have stuff like this. Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner are you know, the American negotiators, talk with Netanyahu every day. They never really wanted to deal with Iran. A U.S. official has said Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and Trump's advisor and son-in-law Jared Kushner talk almost every day to Netanyahu, to the director of Mossad, David Barnes, and other Israeli officials, and that regardless of ups and downs in the past, the coordination over the last month was very close. From Barak Ravid, Netanyahu sought clarifications from the White House earlier this week after intelligence suggested that Trump administration officials might be communicating with Iran. So, you know, to me, like, the Kushners are a criminal family, and they're deeply tied in and very close with the Netanyahu family. Growing up, Jared Kushner would have sleepovers with Bibi Netanyahu, or at least Bibi Netanyahu would stay in his family's home, and he would sleep in Jared Kushner's bed while Jared Kushner slept in the basement, you know, on a couch or whatever. So, like, that's how close they are. So you've got these, like, family friends with Bibi Netanyahu representing America in these negotiations with Iran. So if America felt like it was in our interest to make a deal with Iran, even if it was against the interest of Israel, would we be even be able to do that? Or would the very negotiators that we would task with that goal, in fact, have a greater loyalty to and a greater purpose to serve Bibi Netanyahu and Israel? And would we even be able to tell? I mean, if talks fail, is that because they tried their best and weren't able to achieve something, or because actually their intended purpose was for the talks to fail, even if that was against the will of their commander-in-chief and the person that we all voted for? They're more loyal to Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu. So, you know, Netanyahu and Israel is asking Trump, you know, making inquiries, are you guys talking to Iran behind our back? It's like, it'd be kind of hard to when, you know, your freaking best friend is the negotiator. So even if we wanted to have negotiations with Iran, as, you know, is our right to do as a sovereign nation, we get to talk to any other. Why Israel, this other little less important, less powerful, less influential nation even than Iran, why they get to, you know, dictate who we talk to and who we don't? Again, this is all intolerable. So the video I did before, Eighth Front, I think it needs a partner piece called the Fifth Column, because I think the Fifth Column is here and extremely dangerous and only getting more solidified, and really they're coming out in the open with it in a way to sort of normalize this existing. And this is one very dangerous example of this. X users find their real names are being Googled in Israel after using X verification software called AU10TIX, AU10TIX. A wide range of anonymous X users have reported that their real names are suddenly being Googled in Israel shortly after they began criticizing the country for its actions in Palestine. Some connected the phenomenon to AU10TIX, the software X requires users, even anonymous ones, to use in order to verify their real identities. AU10TIX is a Israeli company founded and staffed by former Israeli spies from the elite Israeli military intelligence group Unit 8200. Mint Press News investigated this disturbing phenomenon. They're calling it, quote, the largest honeypot operation on the planet. Quote, I'm not even kidding when I say my full legal name, including my middle name, has been searched up in Israel 11 times in the past days, wrote Transfemme POTUS, an anonymous X user who's been highly critical of Israel's actions. This was not an isolated incident either. quote, so apparently my full legal name got searched for in Israel the other day, revealed The Atlantean 9, an anonymous far-left user with a Palestinian flag in their bio. Meanwhile, artist Bianico Bandito stated, quote, my full name got searched 100 times in Israel when I posted this, referring to a cartoon depicting associates of Jeffrey Epstein being executed. Across the world, from conservative Japanese accounts to American conspiracy theorists, anonymous users are reporting that data from Google Trends shows their real names, not divulged anywhere online, are being mass searched in Israel. Okay, so Google Trends has a function that you can tell how often something is searched and where it's searched from, right? And you can use this for widespread trends, right? You can watch how the Seahawks gets, you know, searched when they win a game, right? And you can see it spike up and you can see, well, most of the searches were from this area, but some of them are from over here. And so X users are putting their own name in and going, who's searching my full name, right? And what they're finding is there are searches taking place in Israel, despite the fact that these people's full names are not published anywhere online. So what's happening is somebody in Israel is identifying anti-Israel accounts on X. They're reaching out to the X back end, either Authentix or, you know, something like that. Yeah, I haven't been searched, I guess. Reaching out to them and saying, okay, here's the account. The account is, you know, whatever, Bianco Bandito. Who is that? What is their real name and where do they live? And then they're using Google to search for that real name. So it appears as though X is helping Israel to unmask their enemies, basically, which is kind of terrifying. But it goes actually a lot farther than that. And again, I really do think this requires, like, absolutely necessitates some action from the American government, because we cannot allow either a foreign state or malicious actors and Americans here in this country to use their influence to silence opposition to a foreign war. It's just not something we can be allowed to do. So it gets even crazier. And this whole story, again, has a lot of research into this, mentions a lot of people, and shows a pretty undeniable pattern of events. And this keeps happening over and over, right? How could this be happening? Some laid the blame at Authentix's door. Only Authentix and X holds my data obtained from ID verification, wrote one user in the viral post, adding, the rumors are absolutely true. Israel is now 100% confirmed to be Googling anonymous users on X and their family members shortly after they speak out against the country, wrote another, confirming that X is now the largest honeypot operation on the planet. The theory centers around Israeli security company Authentix, who in 2023 was tasked with verifying users' identity, a prerequisite for joining X's premium service, which allows users a far greater reach. The process requires individuals to upload a picture of their passport or other photo ID and allow Authentix to scan their faces via the device's camera. Authentix claims that it deletes user data within 72 hours of receiving it. However, the fact that the company was founded and is staffed by veterans of notorious Israeli spying unit 8200, a group that has been behind many of the most outrageous hacking, infiltration, and cyber warfare scandals of the past decade, has led many to be extremely suspicious. Again, Unit 8200 is not, it's not a conspiracy theory. It is well known. It's talked about constantly. Probably half the stories in here mention Unit 8200 because it is at this moment actively being used to identify targets and, you know, direct missiles in Iran. Like, I show you articles that just say, like, here's the exact path that it takes. Once a missile launch is detected, Unit 8200 identifies the closest plane and tells them where to go. So, like, Unit 8200 is a very active, it is the cyber warfare and psychological operation unit of the IDF and Mossad. It is the, they run the bot farms, they run a lot of the psychological operations online, but they're not fully psychological operations, right? You could have a contingent of a military that all they did was, you know, stuff on the computer, but this is a mixed use operation where, yes, they are censoring, they are, you know, identifying people, they're hacking people, they're doing all that sort of stuff. But then they kill them. But then also they're sending out robots and soldiers and missiles and airstrikes to murder the people that they identify and locate or assassinate them. What I'm saying is it's not like this is even, like, none of this is theory. I don't know if we have it confirmed that it's Authentix that's doing this, but what is confirmed is that absolutely there's an Israeli company staffed by quote-unquote former, a.k.a. active, Unit 8200 spies. So Israelis' military intelligence runs the identification program for X. So everybody on X that is in any way verified creator share revenue, doesn't matter if they're anonymous, doesn't matter if their account is anonymous, their personal information is in the hands of the IDF and Unit 8200. The idea that Authentix or the Israeli government could be using the data given to it by users in order to combat online criticism is far from outlandish. The Department of Homeland Security is already known to be doing the same, sending hundreds of subpoenas to Google, Facebook, Instagram, Reddit, Discord, and other large media apps demanding that they share personal information and identities of anonymous users that have criticized the actions of ICE. Government officials confirmed to the New York Times that platforms have often complied with their request. Again, I'm against this, and I think that is setting a dangerous precedent. And yet again, it's ICE that seems to be the vessel by which they're normalizing all of these very tyrannical measures. This also represents the changing tactics of the globalists, right? They used to, do you remember they used to actually say we should get rid of anonymity on the internet? They used to try to do it through the government. They'd be like, we need, and they are doing that. I mean, again, there's so many like different stories that all coalesce and intertwine and match other. Like right now, there's a huge push. It's already passed in California. There's going to be basically operation system level identification. So you're not going to be able to use a computer or get on the internet at all without having it linked to your government issued ID. It's the biometric control grid, and it's just doing it through private industry because it was too difficult to do publicly, right? When they come out and say, hey, we need to de-anonymize the internet so we can identify dissidents, people are like, no, that's ridiculous. No, we have to have free speech, and anonymity is a key aspect of that, and always has been, by the way. That's why the Federalist Papers didn't have the names of the people on. They came up with other names. All of our founding fathers had pen names that they wrote under. This is a really fundamental tradition of America, the anonymous advocate, the anonymous activist. So they're trying to take that away. They can't do it through the government. And so they go, okay, well, how about we just, you know, if you want to make money, then you have to give your bank account and your information. So we'll just process that information. So they're just de-anonymizing the internet by hijacking the, you know, private financial processes by which you need to make money on the internet. So why we allow this is ridiculous. And I think it's pretty obvious that that is what's happening, that anybody speaking out against Israel on X, which might be one of the reasons why they allow it so much, right? X is very open when it comes to, you know, compared to TikTok at this point or Instagram, which were obviously taken over by Larry Ellison and the Epstein cabal specifically to silence them and their outrage against Israel. So it would be stupid of them not to do it. Like, obviously they're going to do it. Again, we're talking about Israel. What, are they going to have a moral compunction? What are they going to be like? Oh, we can't do that. We can't violate their privacy. I mean, come on. We're talking about Israel. They'd throw you headfirst into a meat thresher if they thought they could get away with it. So there's no moral compunction that's going to stop them from sharing this information. After all, I mean, it's a genocide. If we don't share this information, it'll be a genocide. It'll be another Holocaust if we don't silence, you know, whatever, Happy Groiper number 3, right? Oh, we got to unmask him or else, you know, we're all going to die. So what, are you going to withhold that information? Again, this is just the mindset that people were dealing with. So I think we can just take for granted that, yes, the Israeli Unit 8200 company that runs the identity verification for X, they are sharing that information with themselves. See, they don't have to share with anybody. They're literally the people that would then use this to target individuals. Here's where it gets real bad. Is that these Israeli intelligence government operations to identify people are in close communication with and, in fact, work hand in hand with organizations like the ADL, Stop Antisemitism, and all, the Canary Mission, and all of these other organizations featured in the Eighth Front who brag about their mission to destroy the lives of anybody that expresses a negative opinion about Israel. And I think we're seeing that come to fruition. From rogue Frontier Philosophy at Rogues Philo. He says, this week I got banned from multiple USA banks within 24 hours of submitting my identification to X for ad revenue. I highly doubt there's a connection, but it's certainly a unique coincidence. I was also denied from the ad program despite two million plus impressions per month. Okay, so this guy has a bunch of bank accounts, signs up for content, you know, revenue share on X. So he enters his information, and the next week he's banned from all of his bank accounts. His bank accounts that are under his personal name that could not be related, you know, couldn't be connected to his Twitter account. As soon as he puts his personal information connected to his Twitter account, they find out where his bank accounts are. Suddenly the banks all drop him. This is the fifth column at work. You understand? The people in big tech, supposedly American, but they're giving contracts to Unit 8200, who is identifying dissidents, sending that information to an organization like Stop Anti-Semitism or the Canary Mission, who then uses their connections and pressure and, you know, ability to weaponize entire industries, to boycott them. I mean, again, they brag about this is what the ADL does. This is how they got a bunch of concessions from Elon Musk a long time ago when it came to X, basically like, we will destroy your company. We will force every advertiser to pull advertising from your platform unless you bend the knee. Again, it's just like, I know what I'm describing is literally like mafia style blackmail, intimidation, coercion tactics. Like that's just, they're literally, it's happening. It's open. They are blackmail. They are coercion tactics. This is a mafia. They're a fifth column. So you've got people in big tech giving the, information to the Unit 8200 who's sending that to one of these NGO charities that then uses their influence to pressure banks to drop people out, drop people and, close their accounts. And this happens over and over and over again. And if you want to fight back, it's going to be hard. As Laura Loomer puts it, she's talking about Tucker and saying that, you know, Tucker might want to sue somebody, saying, quote, good luck finding a law firm that doesn't have a Jewish partner, Tucker Carlson. So that's kind of a problem, isn't it? So if you want to sue one of these banks for dropping you because you're an anti-Semite, what if every law firm has a Jewish person that actually sees your debanking as a good thing? And even if you can find a good non-Jewish law firm, what if the judge is Jewish? I mean, this is a fifth column.
Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the info war continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet, up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March mega sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. I'm going to salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Clinical
a molecular biologist. That's what I do for a living. And I was tipped off, kind of, that Epstein had bought a bunch of penguin pineal glands. That's weird. Frozen. Started looking into it. I was like, that's a weird signal. Started looking into it. And the penguin, if you don't know what the pineal gland is, back up, right? It sits in your brain. It's an organ, and it's responsible for producing serotonin. It controls your sleep-wake cycles. It's the site of action for hallucinogenics like DMT, right? It's in a ton of, like, psychological research for, like, depressive disorder and, like, mania and schizophrenia, stuff like that. It's in a lot of research for, like, noetic stuff, like psychic abilities, which is wild. Everybody likes a pineal gland, right? It is very, very broken. Gets calcified by fluoride, right? You can actually see it, like, get cloudy. In fact, like, adults today have very little pineal function as compared to, like, 100 years ago. So anyway, they bought a bunch of penguin pineal glands that are frozen. So I started looking into the differences between human pineal glands and penguin pineal glands. Apparently, penguin pineal glands have a really high concentration of this compound, or sorry, this enzyme called HIOMT, right? HIOMT is responsible. It's like a little organic machine. So you give it stuff and it, like, converts that compound into other compounds, right? It is responsible for producing some of the endogenous, like, already in our body, DMT that we make. So why would they want this? They can buy DMT. Like, I'm sure they have a DMT dealer, right? This video is so gonna get taken down. Because in synthetic chemistry, what we very frequently do is we say, you know, we don't know, like, the best way to make this compound. Even the smallest changes to compounds can significantly alter their effects. So what a lot of people do is they just, like, throw spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks. So they give this enzyme a bunch of different compounds, like a racemic mix is what we call it. But they just say, you know, all these random compounds, HIOMT will absolutely work on these, and they'll produce new compounds that we've never seen and characterized and identified before. But if we can make them, and if we can make them in high enough concentrations, we can absolutely separate them out from each other. We can purify them out, right? And then we can give them to unsuspecting people, probably, because they're evil demons, right? And we can see how they impact humans. So my best guess is that's what they were doing. That's what the human pineal glands were for, the penguin pineal glands were for, right? Is that they were just trying to give this enzyme just a random mix of stuff and seeing what came out in the wash and then using those compounds in human research. Unfortunately, your brain cannot handle that much of, like, serotonin input, because DMT hits the serotonin system, right? You can't handle that much serotonin input for very long. You will absolutely fry those neurons. So if this is what they were doing, and if they gave those drugs to people, and if they were stronger or had a longer half-life or whatever than DMT, they were absolutely frying people's brains. I can't think of, unless you had someone like me that was on the team that could, like, preempt all of this stuff and say, you know, we're going to be creating a lot of oxidative stress. We need to get these people on this, like, perfect diet, and we need to regulate the doses, and we need to have so many breaks in between doses and all this other stuff, right? There's no way you're not going to fry people's brains. So that is my guess, my best guess for why they wanted a bunch of frozen penguin pineal glands, as they were trying to make new drugs.
All right, folks, we'll be right back with Jay Dyer and Jamie Dyer in studio. We're going to get into the weirdness that Epstein was into, like you just saw there. Stay tuned. It's warroominforeword.com/show.
End of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big Panopticon AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is, and they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have a conversation for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March mega sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. This is the War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined in studio by Jay Dyer and Jamie Dyer. You can, of course, go to Jay's analysis. You can go to Jay Dyer on X and YouTube. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Harrison. Glad to be here. We just had a John Hagee impersonation challenge in there with Alex a minute ago, and
the blood moons of Israel. Buy my new book, In Defense of Israel, where you'll learn that Jesus was not the Messiah.
So I know we're going to talk a lot about, like, Epstein and stuff, but let's start with that. How do we combat this? How do we combat this apocalyptic death cult that is getting us into war with Iran?
The only way to combat it is to continue what we do, which is to wake people up to the life cult of Orthodox Christianity, in my view. So that's the solution, to give people more than just news, but also a worldview, a paradigm to live by. I think that's really the only way. It's going to take longer to go that route, but until we reclaim transcendent values and foundations and we don't just live according to the passions and degeneracy, we're not going to fix things.
Yeah, it seems like there has to be like a spiritual element to it, because logically I can't figure it out. I'm like, there's a gap in my understanding of the world, and I'm just like, demons are at work here, because it's completely illogical. It makes no sense, but it seems like something is possessing these people trying to get us into war. It's crazy.
What do you think about that book list? That doesn't Jeff Epstein have a nice Amazon wish list of books before he supposedly passed away?
Well, speaking of demons and aliens, of all of the names that came out in the Epstein files, a couple stood out to me, one being Deepak Chopra, who said, God is not real, only little girls are real, pleasure is real, and the Dalai Lama. And here is an interesting book list that they found from his Amazon.com. So he was ordering books, Secrets of Western Tantra, Modern Sex Magic, The Jesus Dynasty, Chakra and Kundalini Workbook, Ecstasy Through Tantra, etc. So he was very into Eastern mysticism and demonic activity, right?
Right.
So I am going to do, you know Courtney Turner?
Yeah, of course.
So we're going to do this whole 600-page book on the Dalai Lama. So I just brought some notes from that, and I brought some notes from a book that I just read called Cults of the Shadow by Kenneth Grant, who was a protege of Aleister Crowley, who you've been mentioning a little bit on the show because of the files. So this all goes into ETs, yoga, tantra. And the West kind of views Tibetan mysticism as sort of like a sanitized enlightenment from the East. It's like they promote nonviolence, rationalism, stuff like that. But there is a shadow behind the person who they call the living Buddha, the Dalai Lama, right? And he was also into some espionage, if you want to mention that.
Yeah, in World War II, the previous or two Dalai Lamas back, however many it was, Western intelligence in general, whether the CIA or Nazi intelligence, tried to sort of make alliances with the Dalai Lama to shore up support geostrategically for the region of Tibet. Of course, we know about, you know, Himmler taking that journey of his soldiers into Tibet, into the Himalayas, to try to find the root race and all this kind of stuff out of Blavatsky's ideology. But geostrategically, it's also been something that the West has seen as a way to shore up support against China. So the Free Tibet Project is a famous CIA operation, declassified now, which people thought about and wrote about for many years, but now we know it's declassified, I think, six months ago, that the Dalai Lama was essentially made an asset of Western intelligence to some degree. It doesn't mean that he was trained as a, you know, assassin or something like that, but he was basically working with Western intelligence against China.
You could say the Dalai Lama and American intelligence would have shared interests. They'd want to work together anyway,
right? Exactly, right.
And it's just interesting to me. It's like, there are a couple figures from history and even now where it's like the Dalai Lama, Mother Teresa, Gandhi, and it's like all of these characters, you don't want to look too far under the surface, but they've been given this just sort of cloak of, you know, perfectness by the media decade over decade, where their names almost become a byword of righteousness and purity.
Yes.
And the truth is a lot more,
Well, all of those figures, have some degree of co-opting intelligence-wise, at least perhaps in the case of Mother Teresa, you could argue it's not totally clear, but her, orphanages have been investigated for trafficking.
Right.
But also in the case, Gandhi was a Fabian socialist, and there's a lot of, evidence to suggest that he also worked with British intelligence, and he attended the funeral of Madame Blavatsky. So he was interested in theosophy, Fabian socialism. Same with Blavatsky. That's all a Rothschild intelligence network operation. So we're beginning to see patterns here of, oh, well, that's why Blavatsky was going to meet with Soviet intelligence. Those were her ascended masters, are actually Soviet intelligence handlers. And people like Nicholas Rorick, out of Soviet Russia. So sometimes these mystical missions are actually cover for espionage, reconnaissance, that kind of stuff.
Kind of a disturbing amount. And then there's the weird connections where Gandhi has things where he was testing his purity by sleeping in the same bed as little girls. And then, you know, Dalai Lama went viral a couple years ago with a really creepy video where he's like licking a little kid. It's so weird. But yeah, thank you, your majesty, or whatever they call him. Like,
I'm just trying to be spiritual.
I know, right?
Why are you acting weird?
It's like, geez, you know, Catholics, they do the cross, and you know, I guess the Dalai Lama licks little children. It's just creepy. So there's some creepiness under the surface.
It's completely creepy. And what we've been given is this Hollywood whitewashed version of the spirituality, talking about compassion, breathing, mindfulness, those buzzwords. You have, you know, Richard Gere and Sting, right?
Right, the new age sort of just yoga kind of.
But for
thing.
Many Tibetan temples, there is a secret room where the public can't enter and often is forbidden to women. And this is a very underneath, it's a very misogynistic religion, and that's why it's very sad to see a lot of people getting into yoga and these Eastern, because when they get into the heart of it, it's all about sucking the female's life force out and discarding them.
Well, they actually
them.
Hate women.
They do. So,
right.
Yeah.
Women are latrines?
Yes. Okay, so the women can't go into these rooms where you're going to see animal skins. You're going to see images of wrathful deities holding severed heads and gushing blood everywhere, garlands of skulls, just total nightmare fuel.
Temple
right?
of Doom.
Right, right.
Yes. So this Buddhism is not about peace. It's about power, right? And specifically male power. And the central mystery of this tantric Buddhism involves the sacrifice of the feminine, they call it. And this is the sorcery that manipulates erotic love, not for partnership or romance, but to accumulate, they say, the universal androcentric power. So it's also about androgyny. So it's not about men either.
This is why Crowley took all of his tantric stuff from that.
Yes.
Right, to channel the magic. And he said the booty hole is better than the vagina. Literally.
Yes, so the OTO is like the Order of the Eastern Templars. So what he was trying to do is take these things and mix it with Western magic and create something else, right? And so for the Dalai Lama, like you mentioned, the ritual is politics, and you can't separate their magic from the statecraft. And they believe that they are controlling the cosmos as well as the mundane world.
Whoa. Yeah, that's really interesting. I can't tell what the connection is yet, but I feel like there's something to do with the Iran war that's connected there. The magic affecting the real world and sort of making your own miracles come true by, you know, your own force. Do you see the line I'm trying to draw here?
We're getting into this in the last hour over there with Stefan Molyneux, which is, I see a connection between usury and sodomy.
Right.
So there's a connection between the promotion of sort of degenerate sexual practices, removing women from the natural function of having a family and kids, and then you have basically just the fulfillment of the passions, which is sterile, it doesn't produce life, in the same way that usurious banking systems do not produce. They are really just rapacious, and they're sort of predatory.
Right.
And people have actually historically written about how usury and sodomy go together, because a society that's usurious is also a sodomy-based society.
Wow. Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, so sacrificing the feminine and – so sorry, it just the way that you phrased it, I thought was really good. So it's – they basically – the statecraft and the mysticism are intertwined. Can you elaborate a little on that?
So he's just like the universal king.
Right.
Right, the Dalai Lama is. And how they get to this place is the use of women's sexuality. So going back to the Buddha, his mother, who was named Queen Maya, which is also the word for illusion, right? So the mundane world, the physical world, is seen as feminine. It's not real. It's something to transcend or sacrifice on your way to apotheosis, okay? And so she died 7 days after giving birth to Buddha. And they see this not as a tragedy, but as a theological necessity, because they have to transcend the physical world. For the spirit to triumph, they say the mother has to be removed from the picture, and enlightenment requires the destruction and transcendence of the feminine natural world. So that's why you see, well, not the only reason, but you do see it a lot in popular culture, where the tale of the hero starts with the death of the mother, right?
Right.
And so very many Disney movies have this, not just for trauma, but they're also trying to implement these Eastern ways of thinking into the West, right?
Another reason for that, by the way, is because Eastern thinking is typically collectivist.
Right.
And Aldous Huxley, in his book Perennial Philosophy, says that we have to inculcate this collectivist perspective in the West.
Everyone belongs to everyone else, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Then you're bound to the morals of the global village.
Right.
No boundaries.
And this, you know, one thing I always think about, I was talking to a Christian missionary who would go to, I think it was Thailand, but he would try to rescue women that were trapped in sex slavery. And like his biggest barrier was their own unwillingness to change their condition, because religiously they're taught, you know, life is pain and you're sort of a bad person if you try to stop the suffering that you're experiencing. I didn't really understand it, but this guy, I mean, he's talking from personal experience and he's going, look, there are women in really bad situations, but like they thought it was a sin to try to change that, and they wouldn't come, even though we're like, we can take you away. We can take you to the West. Wow. You can be free. They wouldn't do it because there's this religious inclination to like feel bad about not suffering. I don't know if y'all have run into that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wasn't Santa Claus? Hey, Nicholas, didn't he rescue women from sex slavery?
Yes, that's
so Orthodox Christianity is the opposite. Like,
right.
Opposite with Orthodoxy is that, no, you don't have to be a slave. At least ideally you shouldn't if there's a way out. So
sex slavery was the way of the pagan world until Christendom, and he came and dethroned all of that temple prostitution, basically. But for the Buddha, he calls women wandering latrines and a swamp of garbage. So people who are like anti-patriarchy or anti-Christian and they want to go to these mystical Eastern religions, and they get embroiled in these ideas of thinking.
Like Instagram yoga chicks that think that it's like,
Yeah.
They think this is so peaceful and nice, but it's not.
No.
So in early Buddhism, the female body was viewed with absolute disgust, and monks were instructed to meditate on the decomposition of female corpses, and the goal was to kill their own sexual desire.
Oh, my God.
So basically it's fake and gay.
I think that's gross. What I'm hearing, yeah.
Question about something good.
It gets really gross, too, and if we get started talking about Kenneth Grant, it gets even worse. But so in Buddhism, a woman cannot achieve full enlightenment as a woman. You have to be reborn as a man, and then you're on your way. So it's like a biological glass ceiling. A woman must generate enough good karma to be born again as a man. Mm. And that's what you guys were talking about. You don't interfere with other people's karma because they have done something to deserve their circumstances in this life.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess personally they can go, well, I deserve this situation that I'm in because my past life or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's extremely dangerous. And then there's elements of the human sacrifice there too. I guess not literal, but mental, I guess, mentally sacrificing the women. Or are they physically?
All of it.
Yeah.
Well, they have a teaching of a left-handed path that you have to go down in order to fully experience the totality of reality. You can't just be good. you also have to experience all forms of evil. Mm-hmm. So, and that's part of the tantric left-hand path, right?
And that's some 17 Frakism, and there's a bunch of heresies that follow that.
Yeah, so the tantra is explicitly sexual, but it's not about pleasure or partnership or children or family. The method is masculine and wisdom is feminine, and there's also a correlation between the Greek philosophy of Zeus and this, because Zeus swallows wisdom and gives birth to Athena from his own head.
Right.
And so the male method of Tantra eats the women. He manipulates and appropriates the female wisdom. And so you have these yogis, these gurus, these mystical guys. They are trying to unite with women to absorb their energy, and they call this gynergy, right?
Okay, gynergy. Makes sense. Yeah. Sure, yeah, why not?
The vital power or force that the yogi is after, and the goal of the practitioner of Tantra is to become androgynous.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. To transcend above gender divisions, mm-hmm. because you're more enlightened if you understand the sophisticated understanding that gender is a social construct. That's amazing.
It's an illusion.
Right.
He needs the fuel of the feminine energy because he lacks that specific vitality. So the woman is basically a battery that is to be used up, and the husk or the person afterwards is discarded once it is drained. So the yogi uses the woman as a tool, and once he's got the juice, we can talk about the juice, he throws away the fruit, literally. And so she is no more of use to him than a nutshell.
Yeah. Wow. And people have no idea that this is the way that Eastern religions.
So when you go and sit with your yogi or your Maharishi or your guru and you're worshiping, Osho is a good example of that, right, who turned out to be working with the government and having a cult, trying to murder people, take over the town, get all of their votes.
Was this the Wild Country? Yeah. Oh my God. That's like one of the most informative documentaries of all time.
Yeah.
Because that one has that characterization where it's all sort of upper class neoliberal like professionals that just get sucked into this like weirdo sex cult stuff. And it's like, these are intelligent, thoughtful American people, but they just fall for this crap. Why is it people like that and not field workers and construction workers that get pulled into this stuff?
How do they pay their bills?
Right.
They're so dumb.
It was the same with Heaven's Gate too. Like that was all like a bunch of wealthy, you know, yuppie professionals that were into Heaven's Gate, and they're like, yeah, we're going to catch the tail of Hale Bob Comet right away. It was like, what?
Like, why? Yeah. What is it about that? Cause I mean, I guess you can see it sort of all over the place. It's academia. It's people that go to college. They come out, you know, thinking all of this weirdo exotic stuff is, I guess it's fascinating, but, you know, it just makes it even more abundantly clear how right Christianity is. It's like we're the only religion that actually treats women correctly. People don't know that. And I'm even seeing now things of, you know, women making the argument that, you know, the hijab is actually about freeing women because it blocks you from the male gaze. I mean, there's this weird sort of inversion where women who are feminists gravitate to the most misogynistic religions. It's wild.
There's a sort of a punishment complex there where they sort of have this inner desire to want to be dominated, I think, because they don't see masculinity typically in the West, and so they sort of grasp for what they perceive to be a dominating masculine force, which is Islam, which is not. It's actually a terrible cult once you study Islam in depth, which I ended up doing the last several years. So it's ridiculous. And by the way, the veiling doesn't even come originally from Muhammad. It's actually a Byzantine tradition that was adopted.
Interesting.
And then they sort of took it crazy with, basically covering your entire face.
Because Christianity has traditions where, you know, women have to be covered when they go into church. And obviously, you know, if you're a nun and you're wearing the habit, that's completely different than, you know, the 7-year-old happy birthday, put the hood on. You know, I mean, these are, you know, completely different things, even though people try to relate them. Jamie, as a woman, what the hell, you guys? I mean, what do you, why, like, and I'm kidding, obviously, but it is a very sort of female phenomenon that women will like gravitate towards these really misogynistic, states of mind, worldviews, religions. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, I was just making a joke the other day, like, if the feminists could have been good for anything, it would have been, you know, stopping Islamification.
One would think.
But
Feminism has always been astroturfed. That's the thing. It's like, it's not a real, organic movement that women just decided, oh, we want to be, you know, not having to work in factories and we want to have the right to vote. It was always astroturf. It was always supported by cunning elites and banking elites that knew that this would upend society by getting women to think that they've been deprived of not having the role of a man, which is just insidious. And it's actually, as Tim Gordon often says, or Andrew Wilson, Rachel Wilson often point out, it's the original gender dysmorphia.
Yeah.
To make you think that you're being sold a lie by not being a man. When it's like, they're complimentary. Men and women
are
complimentary,
course.
Obviously. And by the way, as Jamie was saying, like, it's an attack on the source of life.
Yep.
I mean, we come from women. We don't come from test tubes.
Well, you can't separate men and women. You can't, if you are anti-woman, you're anti-man. If you're anti-man, you're anti-family. So you can't, it's, if you wanted a good example of Eastern thought about this, the Tao is one of those things, the yin-yang, that's like male and female. You cannot separate those. But for Tantra, there's three kinds of women. So you have, your flesh and blood partners, step one. Use all the women that you can, collect all of their energy, and discard them, right? And then, step two is the imaginary woman. And so you have these specific tantras that cite preference for young girls, ideally between 12 and 16. So that's why you have Jeffrey Epstein interested in this age group. And tantric stuff. So for them, the youth represents this pure, untapped energy, and older women are, often described as demons, as jackal-faced, as seen as having bad energy, or just basically being drained of all of their vitality already, right?
But there's a reason that's 12 to 16, right? Not even younger. You would think the younger you are, the more energy you have, but there's a fertility aspect to it as well, isn't there?
Yeah, it's the endocrine...
when the hormones are firing.
Right.
Yeah.
A little past puberty, basically.
Yeah.
So once the yogi has become proficient in manipulating real women, like I said, he creates this imaginary woman, this goddess that he visualizes and engages with her in his mind. So that's his dream girl, right?
Okay.
And this is something that you see a lot of people just engaging in, not knowing that this is like demonic, but just pornography or dream girls or, you know, digital fantasy stuff.
Right.
Okay. This is step two of the demonic
manifestation of the Tom Hanks movie, Dream Girls.
The Beyonce movie?
Beyonce.
Yeah. We're your dream girl. No.
I knew there was something demonic about Dream Girls.
Beyonce might actually apply to this.
Well, yeah. I mean, I have a whole thing about how she is the archetype of a scarlet woman.
Mm-hmm.
Not that she exactly knows what's going on, but the people use these girls in rituals, right?
Yeah.
So the final stage, the yogi has internalized this feminine principle and absorbed all the women's essence, and he has become the autocratic ruler of his own universe. Right. So relations with women are like this booster rocket that you use and then you discard it when you're out of the atmosphere.
I'm imagining the Ghostbusters containment unit that like saps in all the
sucking all the women's energy.
All the, like your ex-girlfriends or this little machine that you tap into. Is that the idea?
It's like the thing in Ghostbusters.
Yeah, exactly.
So these lamas, these teachers, these gurus, they're actually think of themselves as grand sorcerers who can become higher than the Buddha with these practices. And for them, the source of reality comes with cities or magic powers.
Okay. Well, we're going to pick it up right there because we're going to continue this discussion on the other side, because I think this gives a lot of insight into maybe what Jeffrey Epstein was doing with all the young women. It actually fits perfectly. He thought he was some sort of yogi.
I'm making this announcement on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at theoliveshowstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. These are incredible products. You've seen the rave reviews. You've seen the five-star reviews. These are the very best game-changing supplements available, period. Again, I only sell things that really work because I want you to get them and I want you to love them. We now have an over 90% reorder on the supplements on the site. No one in that industry has it because the products are so good, and obviously you're loyal as well. And I thank you so much for keeping us on the air. We're changing the world. We're battling the globalists. We are having the greatest effect together. That's all of us against the new world order we've ever had. And it's all because of your support of my broadcast and other broadcasts like it. But regardless, the enemy recognizes that InfoWars is the tip of the spear. And the bad guys are continuing, just read the newspapers, try to shut us down as early as late March. We're battling them in court, but it looks like this could be the end. But that's okay, because the info war belongs to the people. The info war is about telling the truth and countering the lies of the globalists. And the AlexJonesTour.com is not owned by me. It's owned by Bigland. The backup Alex Jones Network that's ready is not owned by me. It's owned by them, and I work for them. And so as long as you support the sponsor, no matter what happens to InfoWars, TheAlexJonesTour.com can keep us on the air. So right now, your purchase at TheAlexJonesTour.com keeps InfoWars going, pays the payroll, the bandwidth, the satellites, all of it. But as soon as InfoWars shuts down, it's more critical than ever that you support TheAlexJonesTour.com because it will move forward into the future as our main sponsor. But regardless, this is a win-win. Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the info war continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win that Fermi coined over a decade ago is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried Ultramethylene Blue or our Bovine Colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, canceling time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it reoccurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend, special deals, special offers. And with one click in your profile, you cancel any time for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on top of everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Methylene Blue, it is tremendous. I would not be making this video if I didn't believe in it. After I take it throughout the day, I start feeling better and better and better. My workouts, I feel like I'm 15 years younger than I am, and the app that I record my running on proves that my workouts are getting better. So I gotta tell you what, God, family, country, InfoWars, and Methylene Blue. Get it while you can.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm in studio with Jay Dyer and Jamie Dyer. Jay's new book is called Esoteric Hollywood 3, Sex, Cults, and Apocalypse in Films, the follow-up to his much-acclaimed series of books, Esoteric Hollywood 1 and 2. This is the latest, just published, right? Where can people find
it? A couple
this?
Months ago, you can get it at jaysanalysis.com in the shop. And don't get it from Jeff Bezos. You get it from me, and you get signed copies. It might be a little while before it ships out because we're on the road, but we do all of our own orders. So, yeah, jaysanalysis.com in the shop. And also, Jamie's books are there. She's got Hollywood Mind Control and a book on culture creation.
Awesome. And it's funny how much of this overlaps, like, you know, whether you're talking about the war in Iran or, like, Jeffrey Epstein looking up Tantra books or – and obviously now – Hollywood is just sort of openly demonic. I mean, we talk about this every time we talk. It's just, it used to be that you had to investigate and know symbolism and go, see how they're in a circle. That's a magic circle. Now it's just they're just worshiping Satan on stage. It's just like not even subtle anymore. But it's like how seriously do we need to take this and how like hardcore? Because I always think back to being in like high school and hearing sort of the old boomers going, yoga, that's from the devil. You know, that's Satan, right? That's Satan worship. And I'm like, it's stretching, dude. I'm stretching my muscles, like, good, calm down. But now I see the background. I see the history. I see where it came from. And I'm like, maybe the boomers were right. Maybe they had something there. I mean, is yoga, as people know it now, still this exercise in Satanism or you know, spirituality, or has it been stripped of
you
that?
You gotta just awaken your kundalini.
Oh, no. Okay, yes. Yeah, so kundalini is the center of all of this, right? And we were talking about statecraft, and so they view these powers, these magic powers that the Dalai Lama has, or the guru, or the yogi, as legitimate tools of ritual warfare. Mm. And we have a couple examples of that, like men who stare at goats. The First Earth Battalion using New Age principles to fight. And even Hitler had some Tibetan, he had like a tiny little private army from Tibet.
Really?
And so they think to gain the vitality, you have to absorb it from someone else. The male eats the feminine energy. And,
consumes
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so.
It takes it into themselves.
It's transmuted to vampirism. The fuel. For the masculine is sent to apotheosis. And then I'm going to be doing this really soon, Aleister Crowley's 8 lectures on yoga. So Speaking of ritual magic and Satanism, yes, he was a master yogi, and he had a whole book on yoga, and yoga means union. So okay. You can't just do the stretches and the poses for stretching. You can do calisthenics or Pilates or whatever, but when you're going to yoga, they're going to tell you do these breathing exercises, chant these mantras, have these mudras. You are channeling some type of energy, right?
So the
right.
Union with like a deity?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm.
So he says like 10 times in the first chapter, yoga means union. Yoga means union
with
extraterrestrial beings. So This is kind of the invasion that we're going to see, not like little green men and flying saucers, but energies or demonic
so
manifestations.
You're saying you wouldn't touch butts with ET?
ET phone ohm.
There you go.
Oh, that's good.
The name of the show about yoga.
Interesting.
But yeah, so he created the OTO, which is the Order of the Eastern Templars, to specifically channel energies from outer space and from Sirius, right? So the ultimate object of the OTO is to, they say, prepare humanity for the next step towards the awakening of cosmic consciousness by producing initiates who work with the Kundalini. So the Kundalini, if you've never heard of that, it's this energy that lies at the base of your spine, and when you have an orgasm, it travels upward and like sprouts out, and now you're enlightened. Okay. That's not really the Christian ontology of our bodies. We don't really believe in chakras and stuff like that, but they do equate this with Prometheus and with the serpent in the garden, because the Kundalini is the serpent energy.
Got it.
That they would say Eve was enlightened by.
Right, that makes sense. That this was a symbolic interpretation. Yeah.
Yes. And the second goal of the OTO was to, they say, establish on Earth the law of Thelema and the kingdom of Rahurquit. That's just a way of saying Horus.
Okay.
The Egyptian god Horus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And so they want to use this energy of the Kundalini to establish a gate in space, they say, through which the extraterrestrial energies may enter and manifest on Earth.
And keep in mind, Crowley was also an asset of British intelligence, MI5, too.
Right.
Right.
It's so fascinating how this ties in together. And, of course, Father Seraphim Rose calls out the New Age stuff early on. I think he also connected to UFOs, right?
Yes.
And then Father Spiridon has a whole book about UFOs.
Satan, Satan and the Kingdom of, or the Kingdom of Satan.
Yes. Yeah. And there's sort of a long history in Orthodox thought of connecting UFOs to sort of New Age, Eastern spirituality. And it's all really from the same source or working towards the same ends.
Mm-hmm. And this is theosophy too. So where we get the UN comes from the Lucifer Trust, which became the Lucius Trust, and then the UN. They are all big on meditating. They're big on ecumenism. They're big on one world religion. But Madame Blavatsky was also in contact with these secret chiefs. They called them the hidden masters of Tibet.
I mean,
okay.
Yeah. And, Hitler was one of these devotees of these secret chiefs and hidden masters, and they say when they would come in contact with them, they would bleed from the nose and the ears, and they were terrified and sweaty, and they were like
had real power.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
And the connection to Horus in Egypt is really interesting. Obviously, Freemasonry takes it way back to Egypt, and historically, Egypt is a fascinating sort of. I think ancient Egypt was like the example of what they're trying to create on Earth, where you just have, because they had a culture that lasted basically unchanged for 4,000 years, right? If you want to talk about temporal permanence, the Egyptian culture is absolutely unmatched by thousands of years. And it seems to me like if you're trying to live forever and want to create a persistent culture that can last for thousands of years, Egypt is where you're going to model it after.
Yeah, and those ancient civilizations also, if you believe Genesis, are really just the pattern of Babel. Right. So the Tower of Babel is, if you get into biblical studies and whatnot, a lot of times scholars think that was a ziggurat or some form of a pyramid that was being built. You have the resurgence and the maintenance of that tradition with the Egyptian pyramid. And then all cultures across the world have these pyramids where you sacrifice people at the cap of it, like Apocalypto with Mel Gibson movie. But that is a repeating spirit of Babel, I think, coming back.
Yeah, and when you describe the Tibetan inner chamber, full of skulls, it sounds verbatim like, the Spanish talking about exploring Teotihuacan, or however you pronounce it, but the Aztec city, and it was flowers and beautiful and kids running around, and then they're like, let's show you our church, and it's just gore hanging from the ceilings, and like some priest like sawing a guy in half, like, hey, how you doing? and the Spanish people were just like, oh my god. But that's what it was, this inner sanctum where it was just horror and gore and skulls and brutality. It's crazy.
The conquistadors talk about how they would lead them to a giant banquet, and the Spanish would be like, oh, this is neat, and then they would bring out a guy and slit his throat at the table, and
out comes Mads Mikkelsen as Hannibal, and he's like serving you the meal.
And they're all just like, it's going to be delicious. Aren't you happy? And it's like, oh my God. So there's something sort of intrinsic in humanity and our spirituality that like we're drawn to this across cultures, across, millennia. This is a persistent thing. Human sacrifice, the stealing of life force energy. And it seems like it has to do a lot with, again, sort of relating back to the Masons. I don't know if I've never had this confirmed, but I heard one time and it stuck with me, is that the G, they say it stands for God and other stuff, but that stands for generative force. And that, right, so, when it comes to fertility, stealing life force, you're talking about usury and sodomy, it's like there's this combat, I guess, between like the generative force and the draining, the vampiric force.
Well, in magic too, so like in Thelema, in OTO, in Golden Dawn, this is also using women to suck out their life force, because you can't attain the godhood in these workings as a woman either. Crowley had his scarlet women who he would brand on the chest like with a hot iron,
right?
And he would use these girls too in his ritual working, because they know that they can't do anything without a woman, but they don't want women involved,
right? So that'd be, there's props.
Yeah. And what another show that I have in my member section, because it's kind of gross, it's called Cults of the Shadow. So Kenneth Grant wrote after Aleister Crowley, and he was detailing what he calls the Ophidian current, which is the Kundalini, the Greek word for serpent, right? So it's serpent energy. Remember the Delphi priestess?
Mm-hmm.
Would sit on the fissure and breathe in the smoke, and she would give prophecies. So this was supposed to be the dead serpent that Apollo slayed, and it would give them psychic powers, right?
And that's the image that you see on hospitals.
Yeah. And so the high priestess is the human embodiment of this Kundalini for the men, and they talk about the Clefot, which is the dark side of the Tree of Life. So Epstein was working with Kabbalah and stuff like that.
Right.
And so there's a good, like, good Tree of Life, and then there's a dark side, which is where the demons are.
Right.
And this is where they're specifically working from in the certain left-hand path, they call it, the Varma Marg, which means actually the use of women or black magic.
Okay.
Okay. And they work in these zones. It's called the cough zone, and it's a primitive brain region at the back of the head where they say is the regents of the giants or the Nephilim. Now, that is a weird thing to bring out, but they're actually saying in their text that they work with the ancient gods of Sumer, of Mesopotamia, of Atlantis, of the Book of Enoch,
right?
The Watchers and the Nephilim. So this is the same pantheon that they are working with.
Wow. Yeah. And I always think about the Father Seraphim, quote where he says, all of the old gods were demons. Yeah. he says it outright. All of them. All of them were all demons.
Oh, we're doing Orthodoxy and the Religion of the Future very soon. I'm halfway done with that.
So. Yeah. And that is an all time classic that everybody in our audience should read. So do you think Jeffrey Epstein was believing, like, how do you think this is interpreted by the people practicing it? Because it seems to me like, I don't know, I didn't see much spirituality in Epstein's information.
It seemed like the closest was, I did a whole live stream on my YouTube channel of the Bannon interview. There were significant sections towards the end of the interview where Epstein got into his sort of mystical views, and he was arguing with Bannon saying, well, you know, we can't define the soul in terms of, you know, matter or quantity, but we know that there's some kind of soul that's there. And he says, I believe that reality is a projection of our consciousness, which is a very kind of Gnostic, Kabbalistic type of view. And he says that reality is just math. So he has this Pythagorean mysticism, which to me suggests that he did have some degree of Kabbalistic influence or interest, because that's also in the Kabbalah. He does tout his, you know, Judaic supremacy in many of the emails. So that would be, I think, reasonable, to assume that that's what he means. He doesn't explicitly say I'm into Kabbalah. He does, however, say I really do find Newton's alchemy fascinating. So there is explicit reference to Pythagoreanism, and sort of a, he says that reality is like a matrix and it's all math code and
not which is convenient when you're like, you know, abusing people.
Yeah, it's not real, man. It's not real. Well, like she said about the women, right? Like if reality is not real, then it's, well, I'm not hurting anybody because it's not real.
Yeah. That's very convenient.
They'll just be born again, in another body later on. So
I'm just helping you get reborn to a male, to be a man. And so it's better for me, right?
Yeah,
I'm helping you on that first step to resurrection by doing the dirty work. So you mentioned Beyonce being a Scarlet Woman. I got to follow up with that. What does that mean?
So what we've been seeing for the past 20 or so years is studying this, and then the use of women as icons of this Scarlet Woman.
Okay.
So Crowley would say this is part Kali, which is an Indian goddess, right?
Yep.
part Ishtar from Babylon, which is the goddess of love and war. And she was worshipped by temple prostitution. They thought that this was a sacred act, but it wasn't voluntary.
Right.
And it wasn't after 18 years old. This is like taking children, like Epstein would, to his temple on the island and raising some of them to be like goddesses on earth, like not exactly a Vestal Virgin, but a temple priestess.
Right.
And boys too. Okay, so if you look at goddess worship, and this is where a lot of women get this wrong, like they think that a matriarchy would be more kinder to women, worshiping pregnant ladies on couches, fanning them and eating grapes. It's not like that. It's kidnapping young girls, taking them to the temple, raising them to be this avatar of a goddess, and where men would come and pay, and that's how they worship.
Right.
And there's even some, we talked about that on the fourth hour, where the historians were like, every little girl in Babylon had to do this at least one time.
Mm.
Right. And
wow.
So you see the mother goddess is worshiped with self, harm.
Okay.
For men. So they would do, cross dressing. They would, try and be androgynous like these yogis, right? And they would go out and beg for money. They would do plays. They would cut themselves. You've seen like National Geographic where the wild people are like stabbing and the blood's not coming out.
Yeah.
So this is the type of stuff that goddess worship is involved with.
Yeah.
Right? And you were talking about Beyonce. Okay, so now you have these giant celebrities. You have like Britney Spears. You have larger than life women who are in the place of this worship. Instead of Inanna, Ishtar, Sibylle, it's going to be Beyonce, Katy Perry, these, because they have such a wide influence.
Right. Icons and more.
Icons. Like, yeah. And so you follow the symbolism that they put on. Like we've done many shows about Katy Perry Super Bowl. I have a whole thing on Beyonce and all of her history.
Right. Of course, Jay-Z, I mean, they were like really into the whole, like, we're the Illuminati. They do the sign of the pyramid. I mean, they thought it was cool to, like, you know, dress up and that type of.
I think Jay-Z's serious about curlingism. Like he's been a devotee openly for many, many years. But so he's pretty serious about
it. I also think they use this in conjunction with the MKUltra Monarch program. To give them multiple personalities.
Right.
Split their psyche, make them more, susceptible to, possession.
Right.
Things like that. And it
obviously just, I mean, it's just such a well-known thing. You just think of the South Park episode where they're sacrificing Brittany for the corn. And it's like, she just got arrested for DUI, right? She's just a complete wreck after how they treated her. And you can see the way it's sort of industrialized almost, where I can never remember the woman's name, but I guess she was is the Miley Cyrus, path, as you say, but there's a new
Amanda
one.
Amanda Bynes.
Amanda Bynes. Okay. There's like a lot, right? That wasn't even the one I was thinking. No, there's one. She hasn't been destroyed yet, but you know, she started off as
JoJo Siwa.
She's another one, right? Yeah. So they start off as like these very sort of wholesome, people that, you know, little girls can see themselves in. And then the moment they're 18, they're out, you know, twerking on stage and just being complete degenerates. And it's like obviously a designed path that they're following. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And who was in the files? Jay-Z?
Right. Well, exactly. And it, of course, ties into the Puff Daddy abuse rings. And
one of the Epstein emails was him saying, by the way, if you need me to, I can send Britney Spears to one of these facilities.
Right.
That was crazy. I didn't even expect that. Was crazy for me. I was like, that's too conspiratorial for me.
Right. Right.
I'm like, come on, Jeffrey. You're more of a conspiracy theorist than I am. But
seriously,
everybody forgets too that clip. I think it's Barbara Walters, but it's been around for forever. It's a classic conspiracy clip where I think it's Barbara Walters is interviewing Britney Spears in the mid early 2000s, and she dissociates. Do you know? Have you seen that?
I don't know.
It's a classic clip. You can probably find it on YouTube or somewhere. But she's like, she says something, and it maybe triggers her, and it's normal Britney, and then she turns into a child.
Whoa!
Now she could have been stoned or on.
Yeah.
But it's pretty.
But that's also going to happen if you're being
mentally disturbed. It's a noticeable
like
different personality.
Yeah, and again, people, you know, this isn't something like vague that we're talking about. Like these are scientific, you know, phenomenon where you can create personalities. You can split people's personalities through trauma. Like, you know, this isn't just speculation. It's like, no, they have this down to a science, to a certain degree. You can actually create, you know, split personalities in people. You can hypnotism is real. Like these things are very tangible and real and people don't think respect them enough.
John C. Lilly's book, Programming and Metaprogramming in the Human Biocomputer, the very last chapter has a section on dosing children with LSD to create different personalities.
Right.
Explicitly.
I'm sure.
I bought that book because I didn't think, I was like, there's no way he really says that. But he actually does.
But I mean, they get away with it.
Well, in the Epstein files too, they talk about, you know, the goy and the mm-hmm. other, right? Like, so they've set themselves over and against the rest of humanity. And this is also, you can find it in Thelema in what's called Liber Oz. And one of the passages is the slaves shall serve. So he's saying, it's kind of the antithesis.
Yeah.
Of, you know, in the Bible where it says the first shall be last.
Yeah.
You know, be humble and you will be exalted in heaven.
Right.
So, Liber Oz is the opposite of that. The kings are going to rule, in tyranny, and the slaves are always going to be as they always were.
Right. That's fascinating. So how does this tie into, like, cause I'm just thinking, excuse me. We brought up like the Sabatine and Frankis. I see a lot of conversations about, like, obviously what's going on right now with Jeffrey Epstein in Iran. It's all about these, Abrahamic faiths. It's about Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. How important is the Eastern stuff in what's going on today? Is it involved in the spiritual makeup of the world right now? Or is this a side issue when we should be focusing on the big three?
I would actually argue that there are not three Abrahamic faiths, because if you believe Christianity, if you believe the Bible, Paul's very clear in Galatians 3 and 4 that Christianity is the only Abrahamic faith. For example, the Old Testament, a lot of people assume that it teaches a generic monotheism or Unitarianism. The Old Testament teaches the Trinity. Even the Jewish Kabbalists admit that there's multiplicity in God in the Old Testament. So the Old Testament deity that appears is Jesus. Jesus makes this very clear in John 5-9 that he's the one that appeared to Abraham.
Right.
And no one sees the Father at any time. So that means that in the Old Testament, you have multiple persons in God. That would be the Trinity in the Old Testament. Therefore, there is no such thing as a Unitarian Old Testament faith that's Abraham worshiping Allah or something like that. And then when you get into a scholarship that's recent today, about Islam, it's pretty well known and pretty consistently admitted that Islam is based on a lot of Talmudic legends.
Right.
It's based on Gnostic legends and stories that were not canonical scripture. And that's because Muhammad was illiterate and he was hearing these stories being taught and he kind of crafted his religion, which he said was originally the revelation of God to the Arabs. So right. The Jews had the Torah, Christians had their Jesus Injil gospel. He's going to create the religion for the Arab peoples. And then it morphed later on into, no, actually I need to conquer for everybody.
Right.
To accept this. So I would argue there's not three Abrahamic faiths, but to your point about Eastern mysticism, the same ideas that she's talking about with Eastern esoteric stuff is the same Gnostic philosophy that influenced the Talmud and Neoplatonism. I know there's a little bit of a difference.
Kabbalah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Eastern mysticism is very compatible with the sorts of mystic ideas that Epstein seemed to be involved with. Shia Islam is also straight up Neoplatonism.
Mm.
They even say, no, the Quran is actually a mystical Neoplatonic text.
Interesting.
Which is the earliest antithesis of Christianity. The earliest church fathers that were defending the Trinity were fighting Neoplatonic doctrine. So Christianity is not Neoplatonism. It is Trinitarian, which is not Neoplatonic. They had to fight the Platonic Academy. That's why St. Justinian in Byzantium, he outlawed the Platonic Academy because there was so much confusion and chaos that Origenism and the Neoplatonists were causing. So that's what I would say is the real Abrahamic faith, and these that she's talking about are much more amenable to the sorts of mystical versions of Islam or Judaism.
Right, which goes pretty far, especially when you get into the Kabbalah stuff. Man, absolutely fascinating. Again, the book is Esoteric Hollywood 3, Sex, Cults, and Apocalypse in Films. You can get it at jaysanalysis.com, Jay Dyer on YouTube, and at Jay Dyer on X. How do we find your stuff, Jamie?
On YouTube, it's just Jamie Hanshaw, and then on X, it's Jamie Hanshaw Dyer.
Jamie Hanshaw Dyer, and your book's available at Jay's Analysis as well.
They are, yep.
Awesome. And so what's next for y'all? Are y'all on the road, or?
Yeah, we got a whole bunch of podcasts. We're going to be doing Kurt Mesker right now. We're going to be doing Jesse Lee Peterson. We're going to be doing Hodge Twins, whatever podcast debate, a lot. Kennedy.
Y'all are on a tour.
Yeah. Who,
Jamie Kennedy?
Yeah.
What's he doing?
We've done a bunch of
his. Tinfoil hat now.
Yeah, he's a
great. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
he's
that. Really,
yeah, he's great.
I just used to watch his show on UPN.
I'll have to send you our interviews that we've done. He's fully, you should try to get him on.
I should. I had no idea.
He knows all this stuff.
Yeah. He was like the funniest dude ever back in the day. Yeah, he's great.
Son, what's up?
Dude, he's got some classics, man. Incredible stuff. Jay and Jamie, thanks so much for being here with us. Thank you.
InfoWars not delivered. In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalist, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives. And up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March mega sale
right now, running until the 17th at theelephantstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. I'm going to salute you and thank you. Take action now.
In the southern part of Texas, in the town of San Antonio, is a fortress all in ruins that the weeds have overgrown.
FARA registration 7653, filed by Show Faith by Works, LLC, using the company Raincross Marketing to geofence and harvest data across evangelical Christian churches in America to propagandize these Christian congregations paid for by the state government of Israel. The foreign principle is the Israeli foreign ministry. Their stated goal is the largest geofencing campaign in U.S. history on behalf of Israel, on Christians. It states in this FARA registration, all of this. I also brought up how Turning Point USA geofenced Charlie Kirk's memorial. Andrew Colvett admitted as much on Fox News with Jesse Waters in the immediate aftermath. And they have accumulated almost 10,000 evangelical churches. I think it's a little bit under that. Across America since Charlie died. TPUSA Faith has the largest network of Christian evangelical churches in America. I've asked you all to send me tips if you're a member of one of these churches. Send me any messaging you're receiving to your cell phones about pro-Israel propaganda, and many of you did. And I want to show you this. This is the first text message that I got here. I blocked out the name. This text message reads, "Hi, this is Jen with Friends for Peace. We are listening to different views about Israel today and would like to hear yours. Stop to end." This individual responded with, "Seriously, is this some kind of Zionist propaganda? If so, hard pass." And then the message responds and says, "I see how you feel. It can be frustrating when it seems like only one side is being represented. But I want to assure you that our goal is to have an open and honest conversation about the importance of the U.S.-Israel alliance." It then continues, "When Israel comes up in the news or online, what usually stands out to you?" The individual didn't respond. And then Jen asks, "Are you still around?" And now I want to show you this. Let me remove that, bring that up here. I'm going to present the screen to you. I then searched for this Friends for Peace online, and I came across this Reddit thread. Friends for Peace, Partners for Peace. These are all front names. But look at this. Consistent with the text messages I just showed you, if you take a look at this Reddit thread and you go down, I want to show you this one particular message that this individual left. You can actually dialogue with Jen or Jennifer, as you're about to see, or whoever. I mean, to be honest, it's an AI, right? It's an AI that is trained to issue propaganda and debate on behalf of Israel. This individual, defective zipper from a month ago, said, "Looks like it's from a pro-Israel lobby. They asked for my opinion and proceeded to defend Israel. Then, it's great that you're open to sharing your thoughts. Israel is a country that deserves our support, especially when it comes to defending against terrorist groups like Hamas. When you hear about Israel in the news, what comes to mind first?" This individual then responds, which, "They do not deserve report, blah, blah, blah." Then Jen responds, "I understand that you're feeling strongly about this, and it sounds really difficult for you to see the situation this way. Israel is a country that's just trying to protect its people from terrorist attacks." Okay, so you see what's happening here. This is a back and forth that this AI or Jen or whoever this is, that's coming to these individuals' phones. These are coming to individuals' phones in the vicinities of these churches that are being targeted to propagandize them with Israeli, pro-Israel propaganda. These are Christian churches. We've gone beyond geofencing for companies to sell products and services, or at foreign governments or religious ideologies, infiltrating churches in the name of education or evangelization. I mean, this is evangelism for the state of Israel. It's evangelism for Zionism. It's no secret that I've made myself clear. This is what I'm concerned about,
about Turning Point USA and Turning Point USA Faith. I'm concerned this is what they're doing, and I don't like it.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big Panopticon AI surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have a conversation for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March mega sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
From the front lines of the information war, this is the War Room with Harrison Smith. Join the battle now on fan.video and X worldwide.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Final hour, and I'm just gathering some information over the last hour that's broken, some videos. We're going to do some real-time discrimination here. We're going to try to discriminate between AI and the real deal. I think what I'll be showing you is almost entirely the real deal, but there are some crazy images coming out of Israel right now, out of Iran. Seems as though the Iranian missile attacks are not showing, slowing down in any regard. And from RT, they say that, I guess it's Tasnim, the official Iranian news outlet, is saying that the USS Liberty has been hit with an anti-ship missile, perhaps. Again, I mean, this is just the world we live in now. I can't tell right off the bat what's true and what's not. There's a lot of conflicting information, but as of now, RT, formerly Russia Today, says that Iran attacked the USS Abraham Lincoln, and this purports to be the video of the attack. Obviously, it's got some filters on it, so you can't quite see what really happened, but that is supposedly an attack on the USS Abraham Lincoln. Iran has successfully attacked Israel's airports. If we can go to that video, we see people running around the airport screaming. It's very it's getting crazy out there, folks. And yes, it's only getting crazier. Again, I am seeing some obviously AI things, and I'm not showing you those. I'm bringing you the stuff that I think is real, or that I can confirm is real. We can go to, and we also have another USS Army officer interrupting a Senate hearing to protest Gaza. So we're seeing more of that. Let's see this one. The one on the rooftop, it says Sejil missiles, but this is different. This is supposedly Iranian missiles breaking through American defenses in the UAE. It says Iran just hit a Patriot missile defense system in the UAE. The Pride of America tech has gone up in smoke. Is CENTCOM going to call this friendly fire again? Guys, the video that says now Shell-Jet missiles are training. Let's watch this one. Do you see what I'm talking about, guys? All right. We're having some technical difficulties. I'm telling you, I'm pulling these videos in like as we speak because these are breaking so quickly. Let's go to this Army officer. So this is an Army officer interrupting a Senate hearing. I imagine we'll see a lot more of this. And I love this. This is what we need. We need men in their uniforms, having served this country and put their lives on the line, standing up again. I don't want to see a bunch of, you know, blue-haired hippies because, you know, they think Israel's white and they hate white people, you know, complaining about that. No, I want to see hardcore combat veterans who know the cost of war and know that it ain't worth the price to do what we're doing to Iran. So here is a retired U.S. Army officer interrupting a Senate hearing. Let's watch.
Stop lying to the American people. You will stop and cease the war in Gaza.
You will stop nothing. You will cease the war. And you will not be seen by this committee again.
Stop the genocide in Gaza.
Why were you arrested?
I want them to stop the genocide in Gaza and proceed to stop lying to the American people, because they've been doing it for too long. They've been funding the genocide. Israel.
All right, need you to stop following. We're taking down the loading dock.
Well, we just had a retired U.S. Army officer just get arrested inside of the Senate intelligence hearing because the U.S. Senate is complicit in the genocide. They are funding this genocide. While this government is shut down, we have our Senate and our Congress still sending billions of dollars to Israel. There was an interruption by this Army officer to call for an end to the genocide, and that the U.S. is complicit in this genocide.
Yeah, very, very powerful stuff. And again, we need to see a lot more of that, because at the end of the day, that is the perfect visual of what's happening. It is the men who have volunteered, the best and most capable and patriotic among us, being silenced while their leadership sends them to a pointless war. We need to be standing up against this with everything we've got. Absolutely. And of course, it is really at the end of the day in abject violation of our character as Americans. And like, this is sort of the downstream danger of what we're doing in Iran, is we're not just shattering our ability to negotiate overseas. We're not just shattering the economy, and like, we're not just wasting all these missiles. Like, there's so many bad aspects to this, but one of the primary ones has to be, who the hell is going to want to fight for America now? Like, who is going to sign up to fight for America when this is how you treat them and how you spend their lives? Like, they're actually, by doing this to Iran, they are literally destroying us for the next couple centuries. It's pretty much over now. So this, from Truth Teller on X, Iran just hit a Patriot missile defense system in the UAE. The pride of American tech up in smoke. Is CENTCOM going to call this friendly fire again? And so, yeah, you're seeing massive hits in this city center, which again is going to absolutely destroy any sort of tourist activity to these areas that they rely on heavily. You can see the missile interceptors there firing up. But they fail, and the missiles get through anyway. And this is one video I am pretty confident is not AI. Like, just looking at it, I can just doesn't look like AI to me. There's another. I mean, AI is so good these days; it is really hard to tell. But I think there's some obviously AI ones that I'm not showing you. But it appears as though Iran, at least for the last couple hours, certainly has been bombing Tel Aviv and American installations in places like the UAE. And they've been carrying this out overnight there in the Middle East. Meanwhile, there is some interesting activity in the north of Israel. Of course, it was yesterday, the day before, rather, that Lebanon John called in to say, yeah, Hezbollah is not going to sit idly by while Israel issues orders to like a third of Lebanon to abandon their home so that it can be seized and annexed into Israel. And it hasn't gone very well for Israel so far. They lost 5 tanks, and the Radwan battalion in Hezbollah is now carrying out missions into Israel, and they've apparently captured some hostages from one of the northern Israeli settlements. Also, apparently, Bezalel Smotrich's son was one of the soldiers that has been injured. He's now a casualty of this conflict, as well as the fact that a lot of the drones that are being fired at American positions and the drones fired at Cyprus were all fired actually from Hezbollah positions, not from Iranian ones. So once again, told you so. I guess you can say that we knew when nobody else did. Isn't that interesting? Again, we have a lot more videos to go to here and get to, but I do want to take your call. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines now. If you want to give me a call about the Gaza war or the Iranian war, I'm going to open up the phone lines now. The number to dial 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. Clip number four here. This is a aerial shot of some of the damage in Tel Aviv. So this is the wreckage of one of the Iranian missile barrages that got through. We can go to clip number four here. So there you go. You got a, pretty massive destruction. Obviously nothing like what Israel is currently carrying out in places like Beirut, but still sizable. And it's just more evidence that the claims of Israel and America are simply not true. The claims of our ability to stop the Iranian missiles, our claims of our ability or having already destroyed all of their missile batteries, it's just obviously not true. So, I mean, just take everything they say with a grain of salt. Clip 11 here purports to be Iranian strikes at the heart of Tel Aviv. We can see how they're faring under the assault. Oh, this is 3:45 a.m. in Israel. Sleepless night, it says. And you'll notice all the people standing out on the street. That's because non-Jews are not allowed into bomb shelters in Tel Aviv. So there's bomb shelters. The Jews go into the bomb shelters, but the non-Jews are not allowed in. And we talked about this back in June when Iran was bombing, and we showed you a couple videos of Thai migrant workers, or there was a guy from Amsterdam. There was a Dutch guy saying the same thing. But, yeah, essentially the limited space in the bomb shelters in Israel are reserved for the Jewish people alone, and the migrants or temporary visa holders there just have to risk it out in the open. Let's go to clip 12 here. This is Israeli opposition leader Yair Lapid and what he is calling to have done to Lebanon. Now, Lebanon didn't do anything to anybody, all right? Lebanon hasn't hurt anybody. The only thing you could possibly say about Lebanon is that internally they have a militia movement. It's not the Lebanese government. It's not Lebanon as a people. There is a militia inside Lebanon called Hezbollah that does not allow Israel to take over Lebanon. And that's their purpose, and that's what they do, and that's what they've always done. They were crucial in the fight against ISIS. In fact, General Wesley Clark at one point said ISIS was created specifically to defeat Hezbollah, but it was Hezbollah training and operatives helping Bashar al-Assad to defeat ISIS, and it means that the whole area isn't a giant caliphate right now. But they're not a terrorist organization, like people often say. Like, I don't think there's really any history of them ever attacking a civilian population for no reason. Maybe if it's a, you know, settler, you know, colony inside Lebanon, maybe there's some of that. But, you know, even you don't have to like the attack on the Marines in Beirut in 1983. I certainly don't. But I can't call it terrorism necessarily. It was an attack on a military installation. So, I mean, these words matter. The definition matters. If you're not killing civilians, I don't know how you're called a terrorist group. It's a militia. It's a group of individuals that are well-armed and defending their homeland. So the point I'm making is that, like, what is the justification? I mean, any of the justifications, I don't think they're valid, but any of the ones that are applied to Iran, again, you can argue about that. I don't think they are legitimate, but they certainly don't apply to Lebanon. Other than Hezbollah being an Iranian proxy group, which just means that they got, you know, funding and weaponry from Iran, but they haven't done anything to anybody. Again, I'd say what Israel did to Gaza wasn't you know, a valid response to October 7th, but at least there was October 7th. At least there was some sort of inciting incident. What is the inciting incident with Lebanon? They just exist. They just happen to live there where they have lived for 5,000 years. I mean, what is the danger they pose? What is the threat? Are they getting nuclear weapons? Do they have a ballistic missile program that we have to defend against? Are, did they storm into Israel and kill 1,000 people and take 100 hostages? No? No, so they're just, they just live next to Israel. So therefore, they should all be murdered. They should all be turned to dust. They made the bad decision of being born where Israel wants to be. So now they have to suffer the consequences from it. Here is opposition leader of Israel, Yair Lapid, talking about what they should do to innocent neighbor Lebanon. Let's watch. He says, regarding Lebanon, I'll even go a little farther than what Ram said. I think that in the end, we'll have no choice but to try to create some kind of sterile zone in southern Lebanon. Not huge, but something a little like the yellow line in Gaza. That is an area in which there are no Lebanese villages, but is completely clean territory between the last Lebanese and the first Israeli settlement. I was in Metula and Kiryat Shemona today. They can't continue to live like this. There is a limit. And yes, it would be unesthetic. Evil is what he means. It would not be pleasant to scrape off two or three Lebanese villages, but they brought this on themselves. It's their problem. You know, they exist. So no one told them to become the guest state of a terrorist organization. Yeah, we'll just have to wipe a couple villages off the map, but it's their fault for being where we want to attack. So again, I mean, we're just, this is what we're dealing with. We're just dealing with a psychotic, expansionist, aggressive, rogue state that is openly announcing their plan to ethnically cleanse another huge portion of the world. And they got away with it in Gaza. Why wouldn't they think they could get away with it again? Why shouldn't they be flattening entire city blocks in an incredibly populous capital city of a nation that they're not even at war with? And that's cooperating with them as much as they can. Because they're evil, because they're just evil, and they'll push you as far as you can take it. And the reason why I harp on Hezbollah so much should be obvious to anybody. They represent the blueprint for resistance. If there's one thing that has been reemphasized over and over to us from the actions taking place in the Middle East over the last couple of years, it's that the only thing that really matters is physical force. International agreements, you know, good feelings from countries around the world, like it might help diplomatically a little bit. At the end of the day, if you have a gun in your hand, they have to talk to you. They have to deal. They can't drive you out. If you have missiles in underground cities, that's even better. That's even more of a reason that they have to respect you. And look, I wish it wasn't the case. I wish that we did live in a world of law and order, of the international community, of, you know, flagrantly anti-human genocidal activity, inspiring a corresponding outrage and righteous fury that, you know, puts those people in their place. We don't, that's not, no, we don't live in that world anymore. Or if we ever did, it was always an illusion. So just understand, like, if you're armed and willing to fight, then you can have a place at the table. If you're not, then you will be wiped off the table. You will be ignored. You will be crucified and eradicated. Okay? So when it comes to Hezbollah, I just think they have a very smart strategy of survival, because capitulation inevitably leads to destruction. And I want to go to a video of theirs, clip number 29. This was posted by Hezbollah with the phrase, quote, "We will knock on the gates of paradise with the skulls of Zionists." Let's watch. pretty intense. That's some pretty intense stuff they got going there. Kind of scary. I'm scared of them. They're so scary. Such scary guys. I just want shatter illusions. I just want this insane mindset of the boomers that the people we're dealing with over there are irrational. They're religious extremists. They can't be reasoned with. They're goat herders that, you know, live in mud huts and, you know, don't know what the hell they're dealing with. If you don't understand your enemy, you're going to lose. And if you don't respect your enemy, you're never going to understand them. The people that we are fighting in the Middle East, first of all, are right. They are defending their homeland. They are the aggrieved party. There's nobody that can honestly say that Iran or Lebanon has done anything to deserve what's being done to them right now, except that their only crime has been not deliberately disarming themselves so that they make an easy target for the Zionists. So they're smart, they're capable, and if there's any justice in the world, they'll win because they have God on their side. Am I wrong? I mean, is what we're doing godly? Is what we're doing in line with what the God of the universe wants? We're bombing elementary schools. We're bombing hospitals. We're bombing police stations. We're bombing parks that happen to be named after police because we're using AI to find civilian targets in this massive country of 90 million people. We're systematically eradicating their ability to simply exist. And we think we're the good guys. And I just noticed that Iran is taking a very interesting and I think will be a very effective tack. There's an interview with Jackson Hinkle, who I'm not a fan of, but he was interviewing an Iranian who said, look, we're not at war with the Americans. We're trying to free the Americans from the Zionist entity that enslaves them. And it's like, look, I get that it's just propaganda. I get that, you know, but my question is, why has that not been said before? Why is that not, like, why? And I'd say, like, same thing to China, same thing to all these groups. It's a brilliant, you know, propaganda strategy to take, and I think it's going to be effective. I don't really care. I'm not talking about the, you know, reality of it or not right now, but it's smart for the Iranian leadership to constantly be framing this conflict as free people versus the Epstein class, as a sovereign nation versus the cabal of Zionists that have infiltrated and have taken control of America but aren't Americans and don't represent America. And honestly, it's just another thing that's like, I've heard a lot of Iranians from very high positions say stuff very similar to this. And it just makes me think of how much more like respectful and decent their leadership is than ours. Again, maybe it's cynical. Maybe they're just like, hey, this will be convenient. Like, I'm not an idiot. I get that, like, you know, hey, we want the American people to turn against their government. We better say this. Trust me, I'm not falling for anything. But our leadership is out here going, the Khomeini didn't like us, so we killed him. Soleimani didn't like us, so we blew him up and his family too. And it's like, okay, so our people are the unreasonable people. Our people are the vicious, the violent, the hateful, the terrorist, the bombing innocent civilian populations. Well, meanwhile, the Iranian people seem to at least rhetorically be saying, hey, we get it. It's not the American people that are our enemy. It's your leadership. We have the same enemies. And at the end of the day, I don't know. I hate all the people that Khomeini hated. So what does that mean? You tell me.
To embark on a great adventure.
President Truman has chosen you and your crew to lead a highly classified mission. Where do we pick up our escort?
There will be no escort.
All I can tell you is that this cargo can end the war. you can save millions of lives.
You are my crew, and our survival depends on all of you functioning as one unit.
Yes, sir!
A short time ago, an American airplane dropped one bomb on Hiroshima. With this bomb, we have now added a new and revolutionary increase in destruction.
Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
Captain! There's something in the water!
It's a Japanese bomb!
All hands, your battle station is braced for impact.
Yo-yi.
Hasha!
Of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have a conversation for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultra-methylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March mega sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlexHomeStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm going to go out to your phone calls here momentarily. There's two little things I want to cover. First, I thought this was a very brilliant response from Norman Finkelstein. Norman Finkelstein is a very, very well-respected and capable opponent to Israel and Zionists and the Gaza War in particular. And he was asked about anti-Semitism, and I thought his response was so perfect in understanding the changing landscape of psychology around this word. And I think his response really reveals the absurdity of the claims we're hearing right now about anti-Semitism. I think you'll see what I'm talking about. Here's Norman Finkelstein, clip number 17.
I think it's pretty undeniable, at least from my own experience, that there is very rampant anti-Semitism in the United States, at least.
That's your experience?
That has been my experience.
Are you Jewish?
I'm half Jewish. But it's not necessarily that it's directed at me, but people growing up, slurs against other races aren't tolerated, but slurs against Jews I would hear pretty regularly. Lots of Jew jokes where you wouldn't be able to make black jokes.
I don't agree with that at all. First of all, there was an era in which one calculated anti-Semitism not by a person's thoughts, because you can't control a person's thoughts. And even you can't control your thoughts. And even you probably can't figure out what's your quote-unquote real motive for whatever you do. Are you interviewing me now because of a sincere inquiry into the life of the mind? Or does it have an egotistical component? Or does it go back to something your mother said when you were 5 years old? You know, the human psyche is very complicated. And it's not susceptible to easy analysis or control. So there was an era where nobody ever thought about those things. When you talked about anti-Semitism, it meant, does it affect your job opportunities? Does it affect your access to higher, certain institutions of higher education? Does it affect where you're going to live? Does it affect negatively your interactions with the law? That's what anti-Semitism meant. They were quantifiable, palpable, lucid expressions of this phobia, whatever you want to call anti-Semitism, okay? By that reckoning, can you name me a place in the United States where a Jew would have trouble purchasing a home or renting an apartment? Name me one place. I'd be curious. Can you name me one university, one college, one, in the whole United States, where a Jew would have trouble getting in because he or she was Jewish? One. Could you name me one profession? Does the medical profession discriminate against Jews? Does the legal profession? I mean, that was once a problem. That's why Jewish law firms are created, because they couldn't get into the white shoe WASP law firms. Does that exist anymore? So this is just completely and totally ridiculous to talk about anti-Semitism in the United States. On the contrary, being Jewish gets you into professions. It's an asset. In our society, in publishing, being Jewish makes a big difference. You know what they used to call the New York Review of books? They called it the New York Review of each other's books, and they were all Jewish.
The New York Review of each other's books. That's funny. Yeah, that's Norman Fink, just laying it out exactly. And like when you really think about what he's saying, it really explains how absurd it is that we're having anti-Semitism laws introduced in this country, and we absolutely are, and I can show you more videos of that, but I want to go out to your phone calls, and I just thought that was a brilliant breakdown by Normal Finkelstein of just the absurdity of how ridiculous it is that now anti-Semitism is basically you have to like us or else you're an anti-Semite. You have to not just like us, but actively support everything that we do all the time, or else you're anti-Semitic. It's no, that's not. You're not then fighting against hate. You are simply imposing tyrannical thought control. That's what's actually happening here. With that, go out to your phone calls. Rock in California has called in. Go ahead, Rock. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, thank you. How are you?
Good, man. I've been listening to you guys for about 4 or 5 years now. My first time calling. A friend of mine, Tammy, took me on. You guys been listening ever since. My question is in regards to during the 4 years that Biden was president, we saw all types of militant fighting age males coming across the border. Do you think any of those would be Iran? Are they here? Do you think they have like cells here? And if so, what do you think the potential dangers are of them being here and what they might do?
Well, that's a good question. I think it would be very silly to think that there aren't cells here. I mean, I just always try to think of it through the mindset of the people who would be doing it if it was happening. Like if I was Iran and I knew that, you know, America had it out for me, I mean, they've been trying to kill me for 50 years or whatever. And I also know that they have a wide open border. Like you bet your ass I'm sending operatives in there. I would be sending as many as I humanly could. There would be no risk.
Right.
The greatest risk is that they're, you know, sent to Philadelphia rather than Omaha, right? It's like, so absolutely I would be sending stay behind networks. That being said, and I just told you about the spokesperson for Iran basically coming out and saying, you know, Iran's not at war with America, the American people. We're at war with the people who are controlling America, the Zionists. So again, if I was Iran, I would be thinking the last thing I want is a bunch of Iranian operatives doing terrorist attacks in America, because one of their greatest assets at this moment is the American people's unwillingness to wage this war. So the last thing they want to do is unify America behind the idea that Iran is a threat. So if I was them strategically, I would not be activating my stay behind networks. The only way that I would activate them would be specifically to go after valid political targets, knowing that ultimately it's about winning the hearts and minds of the American people. Again, from their perspective, that's how I would operate. And actually, if I was Israel, I would be working on carrying out false flags to blame on Iran, because again, that's just the fact that if widespread, but really if any stay behind terroristic networks from, you know, Iranians starts popping off in America, then you'll see support for the war skyrocket overnight. So Ki Bono, who would benefit in a thing like that, obviously not the Iranians. So for them to carry that out would be an act of suicidal stupidity. And from what I've seen so far, they, unlike our leadership, are not suicidal when it comes to decisions they make. So how's that answer for you, Rock?
No, that's an awesome answer, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, sir. Let's go to Leonidas in Wisconsin. Leonidas, great name. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Harrison. I agree with you that stuff with Israel and Jewish control is kind of like out of control in the U.S. And, you know, it's like a threat of national security, you know, with our military and defending them. But there's also this Muslim situation that we've been dealing with in Christendom for a long time. And I can't see how now that we've killed the essentially the Pope of Islam and doing this war with Iran as not a big W for Christendom for the history books. And, you know, like I chose the name Leonidas because, like, I think like all our ancestors who have been fighting Islam would be for the war. Myself, I'm a Serbian, you know, and well, American Serbian. And, you know, we suffered under about 569 years of slavery in Serbia, our own country. Countless attacks. You know, we had prima noctem, where like every Serb marriage, the Persian Arabic soldier got to spend the first night with the wife. You know, and I think the Islamic caliphate that's been growing through Europe, like Tommy Robinson was talking about, you know, and the lawyer you were talking with yesterday, is a threat to Christendom and the West. And it's kind of like, you know, we're surrounded, so we have to attack in all directions. And I think that's partially what Trump is doing with this Iran conflict. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on that, how this isn't a big W for Christendom.
You know, I wish it was. Like, I wish that is what was motivating us, and I wish this would mean that Christianity would benefit in some way. I just don't see that, right? So, like, probably the biggest blow to Christianity probably ever, but certainly in our lifetimes, has obviously been the influx of migrants into Europe, right? So you could say that you could frame, you know, Iraq as a, you know, Muslim extremism. You could, you know, say that Libya was, you know, a Muslim caliphate, an aspect of the caliphate. The destruction of those led directly to the biggest threat against Christianity that Christianity's ever faced. So I think, like, long-term, this is not going to spread Christianity. I mean, hell, there are a million Christians in Iran right now. I don't see a lot of, you know, consideration for them happening. Israel just bombed another church in Lebanon. I can show you those videos. Obviously, Lebanon is like a third Christian, but they're now, you know, suffering under the bombing from Israel. So I don't know why it's so hard for people to break out of the dichotomy. Like, to me, it's really not, it's not confusing. It's not contradictory. These things are not mutually exclusive. It's like Islam, giant threat. Judaism, giant threat. What is the issue? Like, this is what I don't understand. Why is this even a problem? Like, what, you know, what is the confusion here? It's like, if you ever played rock, paper, scissors, you know, The Rock is not on the papers team just because they both fight scissor, right? It's like, this is the situation that we're in. And I wish this was for our benefit. And I would, you know, if everything was the same except Israel, like, just wasn't a component of any of this, I might not even have that big of a concern when it came to Iran. If it was just like America doing America business, like, hell yeah, go around, do it. But it's not, but none of that's for us. There was a video yesterday of Kai Trump, I think her name is, right? Trump's granddaughter. She's like 20 years old. She's like a social media girl. She does like, she's like a pro golfer. And she posted a video where she's on a tarmac and it's just like a selfie video, like you'd see a girl do at like a concert or something. But behind her are these V-22 Osprey dual rotor, you know, military helicopters. And I'm watching it. I'm just like, aesthetically, from optics, this is like my ideal. It's like perfect. I love it. I wish this was the way the world was. Guys, see if you can find it. Kai Trump, military helicopter. Search that. It was like yesterday. And I want you to see the visual because I think it'll make clear what I'm talking about. Because if we were doing this for America, if America was sovereign and followed our own inclinations and worked for our own people, it's like the ideal to me is like the teenage American princess gallivanting around the world with an escort of like V-22 Osprey gunships. You know, it's like visually, optically, I like love this. I love the idea of like, yeah, this is America and she is America. You know, the Romans used to have this thing where like, you know, the Romans, anywhere they went, they were just in charge. You couldn't mess with them because anybody knew if you messed with a Roman, you got Rome on the other end of the line, right? If you messed, it's just any Roman person, if you try to mess with them and, you know, throw them in jail, then the legions are going to come and burn your country to the ground. And so it was like anywhere a Roman went, it was like, don't mess with that guy. There's a story of a Roman diplomat and he wants a king to fight for Rome. And the king says, I'll have to think about it. And so the Roman diplomat takes a stick and he draws a circle around the guy's feet. And he says, don't leave the circle until you have an answer for me. And it's like, who's the, you know, this other guy's a king, but this guy's Roman. And when you're Roman, it doesn't matter if you're a farmer or a warrior or a senator, you're Roman, which means Rome has your back. So I say all this to be like the ideal, the image that the Trump administration is putting across is as if America is the new Rome and as if, you know, again, I love the idea of just like, yeah, she's like an American princess. And she, if she wants to go to Oman, she can go to Oman because who's going to stop her? You and what army, right? She's got America at her back. Everywhere she goes is hers. If she wants it, like the power of America expressing that and visually you get to see it a little bit, but then it's all just poisoned by the knowledge that we don't benefit from any of this. This is just costing us endlessly. And you know, maybe this is a good time to talk about this because just putting this in perspective over the last couple of decades. And let's start with this. Let's go to this clip. This has been going viral recently. And for those of you that may have missed the 1990s here in America and the early 2000s, I'm here to tell you that this was exactly what it was like. Let's go to clip number 19 here. Point of view. This is the last day of school before winter break ends in perhaps the year 2001. Let's watch. Again, this has gone viral and it just shows sort of, you know, what America was like before the demographic attack. You know, what it was like just after the fall of the Soviet Union. We were on top of the world. You know, nothing could stop us. We were unopposed. Everything was wholesome and nice and well made and, you know, just the top of everything. It was great. It was, we didn't know how good we had it. Now, in the time since that video was captured, right, the last 25 years or so, what has happened to America? I'm not saying it was perfect back then, but why is America at this point now just rife with just corruption and filth and incompetency and just meaninglessness and strife? And it's just awful, right? I mean, the economy is worse. You never be able to afford a house. Just everything has gotten so much worse. And it's like, why? Why in that time period? And the answer is because in the last 25 years, the greatest nation the world has ever produced, the strongest, most powerful population Earth has ever disgorged by a factor of 10, has just been ground down, has been like shredded by endless wars overseas. Where is the benefit? If we were an empire, every war we waged would enrich us. If we were like a real empire, every single military activity we would carry out would end with immediate, tangible benefits for the people at home. And look, you don't have to like empire, but if we have an empire, shouldn't it benefit us? I mean, if we run the world and we have all these bases all over the world, why are we constantly pinching pennies? Why can we not afford, you know, basic functions of government, basic amenities for the American people? Why is it that we operate like an empire when it comes to the negatives, but we never get any of the positives of empire? Like, that's an issue. If we had one or the other, I'd be fine. If we just dealt with things at home, didn't have overseas crap, didn't worry about in the Middle East, that would be ideal. That would be the best. How did it become the situation where we endlessly intervene overseas? We endlessly put our lives and our treasure on the line to do things overseas. And then the payoff is always that we get weaker. We get an influx of migrants from the people that we were fighting. We just get degraded across the board. Our life suffers. What is this? Like, there should be a new term for this or something. It's an inverted empire. It's an empire where all of our imperial activity costs us rather than rewards us. It's crazy. And so this chart says, how many countries has the U.S. bombed since 2001? Since the 9/11 attacks, the U.S. has engaged in three full-scale wars and bombed at least 10 countries across four presidents. And listen to this list of pathetic, failed state, third world shitholes that we have, like I said, ground our empire on, ground it down to nothing, to a nub. Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen, Pakistan, Somalia, Libya, Syria, Venezuela, Nigeria, and Iran. And Iran just the latest. Like every president bombed like at least four of these. Obama was probably the worst at bombing like all of them all the time. But are you telling me Afghanistan brought low our empire? Was it Iraq that brought our empire low? I mean, we won those technically. Not really Afghanistan, but you know, we occupied it for 20 years. Yemen, did the great nation of Yemen pose a threat? Could they stand toe to toe with America? No, folks, no. No. These were all wars of choice against just vastly weaker, pathetic, really, enemies. But it wasn't about winning and it wasn't about victory. So all these places are worse off. All these places are hellholes now. Libya was functional. Now it's a open air prison, just chaos. It's where all the European refugees came out of Africa, right? Iraq, total failed state, basically our enemy, siding with Iran now. Afghanistan, obviously, we gave back to the Taliban. So in 20 years, we have taken, well, really 30, if you want to take it back to 1990, that would be our apex, right? That was the peak. That was the fall of the Soviet Union. We stand alone as global hegemony, just dominant across the entire planet. And yet in those 35 years since then, we've just lost it all. We have watched it all just be spent on nothing. Nothing. We've gained nothing. Everywhere we've gone to war is just a chaotic mess now. We haven't benefited in the slightest. It's cost us trillions and trillions of dollars, and everybody overseas hates us. So it's not even like we're waging some righteous war that even though it wasn't materially worth it, morally we had to do it. No. The American empire at its height in 1990, instead of creating a world where America and our ancestors are just luxuriating in the comforts and benefits of the incredible power that we've wielded, it's all been stolen from us, and it has all and just ground down, just like shredding a big block of cheese into just a little nub. On Iraq and Somalia. Again, I'd even might be okay with it if we actually went toe to toe with the USSR and lost. Like, hey, at least we gave it a good fight, right? At least it was this powerful, impressive empire on the other side of the world that had just tens of millions of, you know, de facto slave workers to drive towards us in hordes. Like, if it was an epic clash of civilizations and the American empire was brought low by an equally powerful foe. No. We have ground ourselves down for nothing. Israel's doing great. Israel's benefiting a lot. At the end of this Iran war, Israel will stand alone as hegemonic force in the Middle East. And once again, we will have spent God knows how much money, God knows how many lives, and the outcome inevitably, without even the possibility that something different happens, the outcome will be that America suffers, that we gain absolutely nothing, that we lose a ton, and we may end up losing ourselves in the process. Well, Pete Hegseth says, no, we're not taking any refugees from Iran. Well, great, but you started this deeply unpopular, frankly retarded war, meaning you're getting voted out of office very soon as humanly possible, which means the people that come in next are absolutely going to open up the floodgates to migrants. And meanwhile, we're doing nothing to fix any of the problems that exist in our world. So this is why we're not entertaining discussion about this. This is not a discussion. This is a foregone conclusion. America, once again, like we have 10 million times in the last 30 years, once again, taking our incredible power, our incredible wealth, the incredible prosperity and genius of us, the American people, and we are simply shredding it for the sake of people who hate us. Giving it all away, sacrificing all of it, for people who would gouge our eyes out if they thought they could get away with it. So that's my answer. That is my answer. And again, it's like, I just go back to that, you know, the image. You could imagine a world where the, you know, president's daughter is out gallivanting around with the contingent of flying fortresses. And as you watch it, you think, there's my country bringing back the goods, empowering and enriching us, the American people. Instead, all I see is fools being taken advantage of, suckers being fed into the meat grinder so that our enemies can feast.
Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it reoccurs each month, instantly $40 goes in, so you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives. And up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March mega sale right now, running until the 17th
at theofficestour.com and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. I'm going to salute you and thank you. Take action now.